There's another element to safety, and that is if you vaccinate someone and they make an antibody response and then they get exposed and infected, does the response that you induce actually enhance the infection and make it worse? And the only way you'll know that is if you do an extended study, not in a normal volunteer who has no risk of infection, but in people who are out there in a risk situation. This would not be the first time, if it happened, that a vaccine that looked good in initial safety actually made people worse.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Hey, December 26, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. A lot of important things to get into today. Quite a few really powerful stories that I had to jam together that I think are just obviously dispelling the notion or many notions around this vaccine of whether it's being effective or whether it's actually helping or hurting, whether it's actually increasing your risk of infection, things that we've been continuing to tell you for a long time now. But a lot of new information is coming out from peer-reviewed studies, from even the mainstream media that are continuing to tell you the same thing that we've been trying to get through. Just some reason it's kind of becoming acceptable to talk about, which makes me very concerned. As usual, whether that's because we have had an effect, which I really believe we have, independent media, yourselves, in stopping what's happening, or it's just because there's some level of what's happening now that was always part of the plan. So it's important that we ask those questions, right? There's always stuff that's slipping out there. Videos coming out that I always wonder whether they're putting out intentionally so people end up tripping on them. There's a lot of things like that happening. There's actually, on that, to start off, there's a video that's actually really, could be really important and is regardless because it's pointing to something that I think is real, but it's of a pharmacist who is opening up the thing inside of the injections and seeing that it's blank. Now, we know that's happened. There's been more than one nurse who's showed us that the inserts are blank in these injections. Something about that video seems strange to me, though. Something about it seems doctored. That's just my opinion. Doesn't mean that it's not still a valid point, but when it gets shared in a way that's pointed at as if that exposes the reality, and then people who are opening their eyes to it see it, and it gets turned out to be fake, or it can turn out to be fake, it essentially solidifies their stance on the wrong side. And that's not by accident. Now, if that's what's happening, that's something we should consider. But the point is, in any new information that comes out, new videos, new stories, we should be very skeptical, especially when they align with things that we already think. And that's just how we have to be today. That's how we should have always really been with the way that our government operates. But the big stories we're going to get into today, considering all of this and challenging these ideas, are going to be specifically about Omicron and what somebody coined as the Omicron con or Omicron, which is kind of why I brought that up to begin. There's a lot of really important things around this that we need to dig into, specifically whether the PCR test is able to decide whether you have Omicron or not based on what they're telling you. And we've already gone over this, but I'm going to show you why they're making this argument and show you that it's actually or potentially simply a negative test that they're calling Omicron. Now, that may sound like conspiracy theory to all those that can't wait for the actual data that we're going to show you, but it has to do with the S gene and how this is being shown to not be present in the new variant they're telling us. Now, could it be that that's the truth? Sure. But could it also be that that is something being used to make something that is a negative turn out to be a positive? That's also certainly possible. And we should be asking this question. Now, we also have a really important discussion that you're going to be interested to see in regard to the UK Security Health Agency, but contrasting it with the Public Health of Scotland and showing you exactly what we've continued to tell you. And it's really shocking. I have the breakdown, the data, the percentages, and it's going to open some minds, I think, today, as well as the expanding definition of fully vaccinated, which they keep dragging their feet on. And it's really embarrassing because we've been telling you it's been happening for 6 months now, and it has been. It's already happened behind the scenes, and it's just they're grudgingly rolling this out. Now, there's some really important studies to go over today in regard to the injection itself, and the lack of efficacy around specifically the booster and any other shot in face of Omicron, but how that contrasts when, and works in a negative way together with other things we've already told you, the suppressing of your immune system and so on and so on. And it builds a picture that almost becomes impossible to see as not as something that wasn't, that it makes it look like it was intentionally built that way. And it's just my perception, or they're just the most incompetent people of all time. I mean, there's probably more options than just those two things, but as well as an important point about sanctions on the unvaccinated, which we keep telling you, as Whitney coined, your body is the new battlefield and you are under U.S. sanctions. And seemingly now Israel is sanctioning its own citizens if they don't do what they're told. But it's always been a choice, though. Don't forget that, as you're sanctioned for not making the right choice. Now, lots to get into today, but I want to start off by letting people know that it does appear that Super U, at least on the embed, is not working properly. It does appear it's working on the website. So if you guys, and I argue you should, go Super U as well over anywhere else, go to the link specifically, which I do have tagged right up at the top. But in general, it is working on the website. So if not, I would recommend, please don't go to YouTube. I only have it on there because that's one of the only embeds out there other than Super U that allow you to put an embed before you go live. Unfortunately, none of the rest have done that. I'm pleading with everyone else, Odyssey and the rest, to do so. But please go to Odyssey or Rockfin or all the rest. It's right here. But for some reason, the embed's not working. I apologize for that. But let's keep going forward and start off today with some important foreign policy news that a lot of you hopefully are keeping up on, but most people out there don't. Oh, you know what? I'm glad somebody brought this up before we get into that. As Biscotti's asking, this is not a T-Lab channel, just so we're aware. I'm never going back to YouTube, and I'm never going to create my own personal T-Lab channel on YouTube ever again. YouTube is a garbage dumpster fire of censorship, and we should never be supporting them. As you all know, what we're doing is called T-Lab Pirate Streams. And that what I'm currently on, just interestingly enough, it's called American Vagabond because the person who made it did it specifically so they could dump it in my hands and let me use it until it gets censored because another channel was just removed. For those that don't know, hashtag TLAV Pirate Streams. I believe Corbett is doing his Corbett Pirate Streams now, modeling off what we started doing. And I think it's fantastic. And I promise you it drives them crazy. I know they're aware of it because I've gotten messages and I know that they're trying to stop it because of the way they engage with the multiple security checks from different angles. We have to go through all these different checks. But the point is, keep supporting TLAB Pirate Streams and keep supporting the fight against censorship. But I don't want you to think that this is something that we created. Now, going back to that, foreign policy to start today, I just can't believe this continues to happen in such a brazen way and that we act like this is acceptable. I mean, remember before the whole pandemic, the world's greatest pandemic that isn't really started, this was something that was already contentious. The idea that these are, that anybody is illegally bombing in a country full of starving civilians. I mean, it's just pretty crazy. And of course they had their narrative. Well, Iran, you know, Iran bad guy. So, well, we got to kill those starving civilians because Iran bad guy, you know, however they tried to jam that in together. But now we're supposedly in the world's biggest pandemic and you're still bombing those starving civilians. I mean, how do you even try to pretend that makes sense? I mean, they're bleeding about other mild concepts about how people are being given less resources during the pandemic. And that's untenable. And here we are, where the Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates using U.S. and U.K. bombs are currently bombing Yemeni neighborhoods in the capital of Sana'a. This is today. This is as of 12:03 p.m. today. Of course, as she points out, Sarah Abdallah, Western media is just looking the other way as usual. Because, you know, agenda, narrative, it's all that matters. Who's going to think of the children until they don't care about what they're, you know, I mean, I always use that analogy because Corbett always makes, it makes me think of him when he says that. Who will think of the children as they scream until they just don't care about those children when it gets in the way of their agenda? It's very frustrating because this is something that has a special place in my heart from working with people like Hussein al-Bukhaidi, who's on the ground in Yemen, suffering through these problems that our governments are not only allowing, but making happen for their own agendas. But let's pretend like they care about your health and your safety, or the health and safety of any children around the world that are, you know, in the way of something they want, or in general. It's very frustrating. But also on top of that, Israel says, you know, just because we're in the middle of this, that nobody pays attention to other things. They're going to double their settlements in the illegally occupied Golan Heights that nobody anywhere other than Israel and the United States and their allies argue is not illegally occupied. It's an illegal occupation of stolen land that the UN has never faltered on saying. And now we're just going to double settlements in that illegal location because Trump said it was okay, right? That's actually what they're arguing, that the Naftali Bennett, the new prime minister, saying that the investment in the region was, of course, prompted by U.S. recognition of their sovereignty over this illegally occupied territory. It doesn't matter if someone stands up and says, yes, that illegally taken land is now okay to have. Well, who said they could say that? It doesn't matter whether Trump said or Trump decided it was okay, or they called it the Trump Heights, which is what it's called now. This is an illegal occupation. And in the midst of this pandemic that they're calling a pandemic, you know, I don't think that's what's happening. They are continuing to do what they're not supposed to do, whether it's illegally taking more land in West Bank or, I mean, it's constant, but nobody cares because this is the good guy side, right? Well, this don't forget, as we transition to COVID-19, that this, quote, good guy side are the ones that are aggressively forcing dangerous shots in your arms and your children's arms right now. Right. It's weird how this has changed people's perspectives. Right. You have all these Israelis who moments ago would have been way on one side of this argument, but now might be going, OK, wait a minute. This is the same government right now who is forcing a third and a fourth shot in my family. And I just saw my uncle die. Like, there's something weird happening here. It opens up the conversation, doesn't it? Now, bringing this over into COVID-19, I want to reiterate one quick point to start out, because you know, you guys just saw this. And I just want to make this point. And this point could be made by 1,000 other topics. Probably 1,000 different perspectives or topics that we've covered that should have ended this conversation. And I mean that from a lot of them. This one thing right here from the Wall Street Journal, that's one of the reasons why, because people in the, you know, the normies out there, they look at the mainstream like it means more. So here's the Wall Street Journal. If you haven't seen already, the discussion was how Fauci and Collins, Anthony Fauci of the NIH and Collins of previously of the NIH ahead, which is over the NIH, which is all covered by Health and Human Services, which then is all covered or controlled by the executive branch. How Fauci and Collins shut down the COVID debate. Now, if you haven't seen this, I'm just going to skip over it quickly. This is what they're referencing, and you can see very clearly their emails. If you hadn't seen this yet, this is a leaked email that very clearly shows that Collins and Fauci colluded to shut down scientific debate around the vaccine conversation and early treatment. Why doesn't that end everything? Why isn't this over right now? Why can't we point and go, wait, oh, clearly, they clearly stuck in their finger into the conversation and said, no more on that topic, done. I don't care what it shows. I don't care what it means. I don't care the science around it. We don't like what it's showing you. Now, you can read into this all you want. And I mean, like, research it. You will find quite clearly that there's obvious reason that this should have at the very least been an open conversation, because there is science behind what they're talking about in the Great Barrington Declaration. It's not just currently. It ties back to plenty of valid research in the past. So at the very least, it should have been a public conversation. They didn't want that. I don't care whether they pretend it's because we were all going to die. Well, clearly that wasn't the truth. When you look back at the time they were screaming 3.6 death rate, they're wrong. They were lying. We were misled. Either way, this should have ended it, as well as 1,000 other points we've made, but it doesn't though. So we need to realize we are in fact, and I think what they've actually meant to create, we are in a post-truth world for the people that are on this side of the argument. Now, I don't mean on left versus right side. I mean on the side of the people that are blindly still trusting the authority figures that have verifiably misled you, lied to you, hurt you, stolen from you, but you still trust them because you're, I don't know, I'm blanking on the term, Nightingale, or somebody in the chat, tell me the Florence Nightingale syndrome, right? Isn't that what it's called? Where you basically end up, maybe I'm misremembering the term, where you end up basically in becoming enamored with your captor. I think that's what we're dealing with on top of the mass psychosis, mass formation, and all of that. But how can that be? Because people don't care about the truth. It's okay to them that they misled this because their side already agreed that wasn't a good thing. So it's okay that it took dishonest action as long as it's in the direction of what you think, apparently, because that doesn't matter. And this was shut down and we're already moving past it. 24 hours later, was it 20 years ago? Well, on to Omicron in general, as they're continuing to shut down debate of this discussion, yet that's okay. Milder disease. We should realize in this first part of it about the actual severity, Stockholm syndrome. Well, so what was Florence Nightingale then? That's so strange. Yeah, it is Stockholm. So somebody in the chat, I won't read it out. I don't want to remember what that was. Somebody who knows, what was Florence Nightingale? Now, the severity of this is really important, right? Because the idea here is that they're trying to make this out to be something super dangerous while they're telling you it's not actually super dangerous. I mean, talk about mental gymnastics, right? I mean, it's totally not more dangerous, but here's why that makes it more dangerous. And that was right in the beginning. Omicron may cause mild disease. Not may, does. And that's been shown 100 ways from every different angle. A lab study hints at why. So I love how they're saying it may do this, but we already researched why it does do that. Let me explain why it does do that. But you just said may do that in the title, in the very title. Of course, hints at why, but I'll take that back. But Omicron appears to be less efficient at entering the lung cells, they say. Okay, this may help explain why some early data from countries such as South Africa, England, suggest the strain causes less severe disease. Like, I wasn't joking about this. You remember when I said that in the beginning? I bet we can look back at this as long as this goes forward, and they'll still go, well, maybe it's more, could be less, like with Delta. They're still pretending like we don't know if it's more dangerous. Do you know how ridiculous that is? Or do we not have enough data? Do we not care to look? It's sort of like Vayers. As long as we don't look at it, it's not really there. It could be more dangerous. We know how we find out. We look at it. But don't look, because then we have to admit that it's not more dangerous. So it still could be more dangerous. It's just comical how childish this whole thing is. Suggest the strain causes less severe disease. Like, if you were being honest right there, you would say by every single data point we have, every single location suggests it's exponentially less dangerous, but more transmissible. But no, they don't make that clear, and they intentionally will drag their feet on it. Could be. But although Omicron may not invade lung cells efficiently, the new study posted Tuesday to a preprint database, which means everything or nothing, depending on who's pointing at it, right? Confirmed that the variant dodges most of the antibodies made by fully vaccinated individuals. Well, isn't that pretty interesting? Remember, we just talked about the study that suggests specifically in children. But I've actually reached out to, on Twitter, you guys probably saw the tweets, to both Dr. McCullough, I got to be clear about that because it sounds too close to McCullough, and Dr. Malone. And I asked them, I said, well, what are you guys' thoughts on this? Because their opinions on these things go a long way, and they're much more educated on these topics than I am. So I'd like to hear their thoughts on that. We just talked about it in regard to children having antibodies for all coronaviruses after having a natural infection, which seems to suggest ongoing natural immunity, even in the face of Omicron. Both of them seem to be saying the opposite right now, and their opinion matters. So I was curious what they thought about that. Either way, what we're seeing here is confirmed that the people with the injections, as you'll see, just destroyed as we go through the show today, very clearly not working. And guess what? The 3-month time frame weirdly seems obviously relevant. Not just relevant, it's the point. And you'll see, it's everywhere. Everywhere. The whole 3-month discussion we've been having is clearly fleshing out. And their antibodies, if even barely there to begin with, are just absolutely going. In fact, we'll get to a point that shows you that it goes into negative after 3 months, which is probably why they knew 3 months was the point a long time ago. Now, it says, and similar to other research, the team showed a booster dose, the third or fourth or whichever one they want to call it, which is no longer a booster when they're telling you it's part of the regimen, significantly, they say, increases the neutralization power of vaccinated people's antibodies. Now, here's the point. If you have zero antibodies, a small fraction of an increase is a significant increase, is it not? If you've got one antibody and it goes to 10, woo, that's a significant increase. But what if you need, like, that? Those numbers aren't really relevant to what the normal things are, but what if it goes, what if you need 1,000? And it went from 1 to 10. Well, it's a significant increase, but what does it mean in the context of whether it's actually protecting you? That's what we're going to get into today. But you see, they're going to keep screaming, get the third shot. Significantly increases your benefit. Well, what does that mean into how it really protects you? It can significantly increase from zero, but if your protection is only 30%, that doesn't sound like something you should do when your risks are much, much higher and your risk in general from COVID is very, very low. See, none of this matters in the context of COVID vaccine good at all costs. It says, though, we'd still expect a waning of immunity to occur. So they're already admitting right now that the third shot is going to wane. And we've already told you that. We were actually ahead of it here yesterday when we talked about waning in days. I almost wish I would have saved that title for today because it's even more clear today. Yes, it wanes after 10 weeks, they said, but that's the end goal they're pointing at. It shows very clearly to immediately begin to wane. Immediately. Then it says, that was just his name in general. Ravinda Gupta, professor at clinical microbiology at the Cambridge Institute. So yes, it wanes, and we've known that, and we told you that before. And of course, like always, we were censored for saying it before they told you about it. So milder disease. Let's make sure we understand that. This thing is not more dangerous. So all they're bending over backwards to make it seem like that are just trying to find ways to make it more dangerous. That seems like an agenda. Shouldn't it be? Hooray! Oh, we're fantastic news, everybody. It's not more, but that's not how this is being framed. It's less dangerous, but who knows? It could do this and it could do that. Still stay scared because that's what keeps you doing what we want. Well, here is what we're seeing. The fear, the hype, even to the point to where New Zealand has literally okayed euthanasia for COVID patients. This is not a joke. This is on December 20th. New Zealand is allowing people to take their own life in a hospital setting. You'll see the point. If you have COVID, if you think you're going to die from COVID, or if you just can't take the symptoms, this is not a joke at all. And this is fear. People are so afraid of this based on the fact that they're being told it's the end all be all danger, such dangerous situation, while simultaneously the information is showing them that it's nothing to be afraid of for the vast majority of people. And by the way, that goes back to Delta and everything else before. For the very beginning of this, it's not just continuing to mutate less dangerous. It's always been like that. It has always been significantly less dangerous than the flu for most people. If you don't know that by now, ask yourself why. If you think we're lying to you right now, look at the CDC website, not the average percentage for everybody when it's all combined, which we'll get into in a minute, but the actual risk for people under 25 is basically zero, statistically speaking. We'll show you in a minute. 1 in a million chance of dying if you're under 19, according to Oxford calculator, for a COVID risk. But using that fear, they're getting people to think that they have the option to take their own life instead of realizing that, you could just last it out and have immunity and then never have to deal with this stuff again. Patients admitted to hospital with COVID-19 can die of euthanasia if doctors decide they might not survive. Isn't that interesting? I mean, think about the point is that this is something that's not allowed for other things. Why COVID? Do you allow it for the flu? If someone's going to get super sick with the flu, do you give them the option to take their own life? I mean, this is leaning into the hype, the narrative, the fear, and in fact, leaning into the hyping and increasing of the numbers, right? That's exactly what it will do, whether you see it like that or not. Some people might just decide, I don't want to deal with this. And there's another number. And were they going to die? Who knows? They might have. It's just alarmingly over the top to let them think that this is how serious it really is, when for most people, it's absolutely not. The Ministry of Health confirmed that a right to a lethal injection under a new euthanasia law could extend to patients who were either dying from the coronavirus or suffering unbearably from its consequences. So you don't even have to be dying. You can just perceive it to be unbearable. And now how much you want to bet that some of those unbearable side effects will be things that are caused by the injections. We already see that happening. We already see the neurological problems being after that, being long COVID and so on, just being named this. And so that's something you could see happening. Now, these are extremes, maybe not. But either way, it's possible. And this is something that should not be allowed. The hype around this, if somebody is at that low of a risk, why would you allow them to potentially think that they should take their own life or even have that as an option? Now, the worst part about this is how it could be used in malicious ways that, of course, the typical people would call conspiracy theory, as they always have with almost every topic around this up until it later becomes the case. And they turn around and still call us crazy. In response to a request for clarity on a euthanasia law, which came into force last month, the government declared that, quote, in some circumstances, a person with COVID-19 may be eligible for assisted dying. The policy left the, quote, the door wide open for abuse of elderly and vulnerable patients, especially if the country's health service came under pressure from a COVID surge. It says, and this is from an expert, it would not be hard to envisage a situation in which a speedy and sizable rise in COVID hospitalization could result in pressure to utilize euthanasia and assist suicide as tools to resolve such a serious case. We saw the arguments made during the original part. And remember, this actually happened in places like Germany, in places like the UK. Or specifically in US and UK, we're talking about midazolam, or we're talking about remdesivir, and how these were applied in ways that actually ended up taking people's lives. Data, when you're looking at the data, it almost seems impossible to see that it's not an action that was taken versus an accident. On top of that, we already showed you the German nursing homes where they forcibly injected people and then they died. and were specifically told you these were people that were, it was, I think it was the vast majority of them had mental disabilities or other disabilities. Even some of them had things like dyslexia or specifically it was things like dementia. And so they targeted specifically people with those kind of disabilities and forcibly injected them. And then most of them died after that. Now, of course, they said, oh, well, they were old. Okay, well, that's perfect, isn't it? And this was just something that Reiner Fulmick discussed. We showed you this live on the show. We had the video and everything. They were holding them down and injecting them. On top of that, remember in England, they showed you at the time, 2/3 of the people that were dying there from COVID were people with mental disabilities. How in the world does that make sense? I remember they also had the DNR issue where they were giving people do not resuscitate orders for things like dyslexia. That's what eugenics looks like, guys. And that's what they're talking about. So if you're willing to dismiss that topic, then you're not paying attention. It permits both euthanasia and assisted suicide for adults suffering from an illness, which would be terminal within 6 months. That's what they're naming it, right? So someone who's not even that sick will be told they might die in 6 months. They might decide to do this because they don't want to deal with it. Or who were in advanced state of irreversible physical decline, or who were suffering unbearably. And you could see how this could be applied to people who are just elderly. Either way, it's fear, hype, not justified, based on all of the actual data that we're looking at, which is why we see things like this. This, guys, is next level. This woman, I wasn't even going to show this today other than I think it's important to show you what this is doing to people. They're trying to act like it is people like us who are scared and we're so afraid of everything. I mean, it's just so, it's almost like they must know that's not true. They must know that we're the ones out here that aren't afraid, because it's pretty clear we're aware this thing is much less dangerous than the flu. Not wearing masks, not doing this stuff, not because we're don't care or we're anti-science or because we hate people. It's because we're taking our own choices medically to keep ourselves healthy. And weirdly enough, seem to be the people not continuing to get sick from what continues to go forward. How does it look like these people are the scared ones when they're the ones that are like frantically trying to get everyone else to do what they think they're supposed to do to keep everybody safe? But they keep framing it the other way around. Now, take a look at this. This is alarming. And this woman is scared. She is so hyped up on the fear. But it's a combination of both being afraid as well as the fact that she's pissed off that in her mind, this person who's politically different than her is refusing to do what they're supposed to do. And both of those things together caused this. I forgot two things. I'm going to play the actual video, but just especially this. I want to play this all the way through, but please, it's usually a family-friendly show. There is cussing here multiple times. But this is important to see for understanding what this is doing to people. So let me do it again. Just if you have kids, be aware.
Yeah, put your fucking mask on. Who invited you to come to this show?
I'm hating and I
can drink your ass up.
And make note of the fact that her mask is pulled down and he is at least claiming to be eating and drinking. There's no, it's ridiculous that we're pretending this thing has any effect based on the fact that the scientific research does not show that it has any statistically significant effect on what we're talking about. That's all the peer-reviewed science, but who cares about that in the trust the science crowd? She's yelling at him with a mask off while she's standing there in the position where they're supposed to be wearing their mask, right? I mean, that's the whole ridiculous point of this, but it's all about him not doing what he's supposed to.
You dare talk to me like that. Stand your ass up.
And now she's the one becoming confrontational, right? Stand up, like he's going to stand up and fight a woman in the middle of a plane. That's what always frustrated me growing up, was when you had a woman who's trying to stand up and fight somebody who's especially in a context like this. And then if a guy did decide to do something, well, then he's the worst person alive, and they know that, right? I mean, it's just the pushing that concept is ridiculous. Like, I'm sure this guy, if he decided to, could probably whip her pretty quick, but that's not what's supposed to happen, right? Because it's wrong, and it doesn't seem to be somebody who wants to get... Either way, I could perceive it all over the place. Either way, she's the one trying to make this a problem. He's sitting down, and all she cares about is him wearing his mask.
Sit down, Karen!
Karen?
You're a goddamn Karen,
no.
Sit down!
Sir.
Sit down, Karen!
Sit down, pussy!
Ma'am.
Pussy, no, you're the pussy!
Oh, no, you're the dick!
Ma'am, do you want the pussy to meet you on the ground?
What about him?
See, they're talking to her. They're talking to her, not him. He's sitting down. He's eating. At least that's what he's saying. So, I mean, that's the, supposed to be the acceptable, you know, I'm in the middle of eating, which is so silly because it doesn't change. It's obviously an illusion if that's how that goes. But they're yelling at her. Now, I want to know why they didn't immediately do something about this. She's violently acting. If that was the other way around, that guy would probably already been tackled to the ground by some kind of marshal, right? It's always double standard. I almost think it's because she's on the side of the narrative that they're kind of going, well, you know, what do we do here? If it was the other way around, you know that he would have been hit, probably grabbed already by one of the people on the crew.
You got your mask down, bitch.
Sir.
And there you go. Violent contact, right? She's a criminal. Doesn't matter how, doesn't matter why or what you, how justify you think it is. She's the one that crossed the line. Now, yes, he did call her a name. You could say that was bad or wrong or inappropriate. Doesn't really matter in the context of what's legal, right? Who's breaking the law and who's not. And clearly she is. And all she can care about is him doing it first because he has to do it too, not just me. These are children we're dealing with. Why is nobody doing anything? Where is the woman? Look at this. Look at this. I mean, are you serious? If that was me and I was the guy on this plane, I would 100% be holding the people and the crew accountable after that. She's been standing there for a minute and a half, violently going at this guy, and they're just kind of passively stopping her. I mean, come on now. Those people should lose their jobs. I'm not saying that the actual flight attendants should need to be physically dealing with people, but there's people on the plane all for that. Whoever, somebody should have done something for how long that went on. That's my opinion.
You fucking piece of shit.
I will put mine on when he puts his on. Oh, so clearly you really care about the safety, right? No, it's about compliance. It has always been about compliance, even in her mind. Recognize that. Even if she doesn't admit that to herself. That's crazy, guys. This is literal psychosis. This is what I talked about with the schizophrenia in the beginning and how people have been fractured by intentionally so. This is our society today, guys, and this is wild. This is not by choice. The government did this to you. The media did this to you. Wow.
And she just went crazy on the airplane. Punched this man in the face, spit on him, scratched him, pour hot water on my leg.
And apparently spilled water on somebody, hot water on the way by, right? What a great person. Clearly cares about the safety of everybody in the plane. Even in her logic, you're spitting and yelling. I mean, you're clearly don't care about what you're telling us is the best and most important thing. I mean, that is next level, guys. But this is where it's all going. And just so we're clear, there are maybe not equally, but examples just as crazy in reverse on the other side. People who are so completely hyped up on you know, specific internal two-party talking points on the side of the opposite, who are outrageous. You know, or let's just say, how about people out there that are walking around and spitting on people? And that, because I have seen examples of that, because they believe it's not real. Do you know, that's wildly over the line, even if you are completely right in the sense that you don't, that it's not really there, right? This is a problem, and they want this to happen. They want us to go at each other's throats. So they, exactly in the chat, divide and conquer, guys. This is what it's all about. Now, here's one more point on this. As this is what somebody posted on this, this was on Reddit. 1.9 thousand upvotes on Reddit. Now, this is somebody, they're putting their point down there. These are people you're supposed to coexist with. Well, see, again, that's the reason I disagree with that statement is because this is a person who's pointing at this and saying, that's only that side. If you still think it's one side versus the other, you are lost as well. This is all sides. There are people on the right and the left who are acting just like this. And if you don't think that, just take a quick look at the independent media. There are people within this that are completely lost in this. People that would call out the government and the war and what they're doing and how they lie about everything until suddenly a vaccine's in the mix. And now you're an anti-vaxxer. And how dare you resist the vaccine? We all need a vaccine passport. Wild. Clearly, they picked the right topic because those people have lost the plot. And it's all over the map. I mean, there's even people on the side of the so-called progressives that are pointing at those people and saying, look at how lost they are. And they're also just as lost, thinking they're tapping into everything. And all they're doing is brushing across what they're allowed to say, what YouTube lets them say. It's crazy. The point here is that these are the people who are being manipulated by the government, who think that anybody who goes against the vaccine is a bad person. That's left and right and all over the map. It says, the thing I love most about these vaccine mandates is the fact that I feel like I'm winning every time one of these anti-vaxxer nuts takes the jab. And just to be clear, this is clearly somebody who's pointing at the right when they're saying this. But my point stands because I pointed it out everywhere. It says, they are clearly so scared, so helpless, so powerless. Seriously, right? This is projection. I don't know how in the world you would think somebody who's refusing to do the things that you're telling them keeps them safe makes them scared. Like, it's visibly the opposite. You could argue that they're so uninformed and ignorant, they don't realize they're putting themselves at risk. But by default, it means they're not scared of the risk because they're not doing what you're telling. It's so silly. They're scared, and they're scared of you. They're scared by you not doing what you're supposed to, because that undermines whether they're actually doing the right thing. There's a lot of scared happening on that side of the argument. It says, as a substance, they're clearly uncomfortable basically this injection permanently in their body. The fact that they feel morally defeated, anxious, and paranoid, that they'll experience pain and even death fills me with giddy, whatever that word means. The point is that she's saying she's happy that these people are, in her mind, inaccurately worried they're going to have pain and death, even though they've admitted people have died and are caused great pain from these injections. So that's just her own cognitive dissonance, refusing to acknowledge the reality. But she is actually filled with positive feelings that these people are suffering. This is what a bad person looks like. I don't care whether you think you're doing it for righteous reason. If you're relishing people's pain in their pain, you're a disgusting human being. And most importantly, and by the way, the government lets them feel this is virtue. And most importantly, as a female, I love it. And this is when you get into the party politics, when the anti-vaxxer males get vaccinated, especially when these are the ones who perpetuate rape culture. Right, because, you know, broad brushing people is supposed to be okay as long as it's not on the white male side, right? And a white male can't broad brush anybody because racism. But of course, if you do it, it's okay because it's just what's supposed to be okay, right? You telling me that there's aren't other groupings that mean it's so subjective. Seeing them for once forcefully injected by a needle that I am partially responsible for, because she petitioned for mandates, slightly satisfies my desire for revenge. Exactly. Revenge for all the women raped by men over the centuries. You see how misguided this all became? This is why their party politics work for them. This is how they're seeing it. It's revenge for woke politics, I guess, and how they perceive the white male of the world to be the pinnacle of problems everywhere. It's just crazy. Everything about this is wild, and it shows you there's a punitive action here. This is them wanting. Oh, here, I forgot to read what I wrote here, and this is the point. This is what the corporate media government hysteria has done to people, as well as their allowance and even praising of this kind of malicious punitive action against people who are not doing what they're told. This woman wants this man to simply suffer because he dares not cower in fear like she does. All based on the Omicron risk right now, the risk of how serious this all is, right? Well, let's talk about the Omicron. Classification of Omicron, SARS-CoV-2 variant of concern. This is back from November 26th. Here's what it says. This is in discussion of the genetic sequencing conversation we've already had, how, as we've told you, and it's very clearly backed up by Reuters and everybody else who fact-checked it from before. They didn't want you to know this now. You only find out whether or not you have a certain variant by using genetic sequencing. There's only 0.9, as of a couple months ago, a fraction of 1% of all the cases they've ever gotten in the United States has been sequenced. It was 0.9% from the whole time period. But then suddenly Omicron comes around and we know where it is all the time. There's only a few locations that they can use. And even before in Delta, they admitted what they do is they sample areas and they give you an estimate. Yet somehow it's being used as an absolute right now. Well, you want to know why? Here's why. Current SARS-CoV-2 PCR diagnostics continue to detect this variant. Interesting. Several labs have indicated that for one widely used PCR test, one of the three target genes is not detected, called S gene dropout or S gene target failure. And this test can therefore be used as a marker for this variant, pending sequence confirmation. There you go. So what's happening is they're using the PCR test, and if it doesn't show the S gene, or specifically, basically, if it gives them a negative, they're saying, well, that must be Omicron. Pretty interesting. Using this approach, this variant has been detected at faster rates than previous surges in infection, suggesting this variant may have a growth advantage, or they're broadly testing and using this as a way to make it seem like something's happening. Could it be that this is a test that's giving them a negative and they're using that to say Omicron, and that's why there's not really a lot of problems and that's making it look like the injections were? There's a lot of possibilities there. Either way, make sure you don't miss the part where it says pending sequencing confirmation. That's not for sure. So they're using PCR tests. if they don't see something, they're claiming that's Omicron. But they're not for sure, yet they're using it like that. And the media reports it like that. 74% of the cases right now are Omicron. That's what they're telling you. Don't forget that it's not all Delta anymore. That's what Fauci promised them and what he said before. They're now pretending. I don't think they can tell for sure, but they're now saying 74% of what's happening in this country right now is Omicron. That's important for other things as we go forward. Pending sequencing confirmation. Now, here's a very interesting thread. And I give this guy, at least from what I saw, the credit of using the Omicron con phrase. Now, he says, excuse me. The PCR test was originally set up to look at three target genes of coronavirus. The S gene, this is that specific version of this. This is one of the different varying PCR tests, none of which can actually detect variants. That's important. That's why it says pending sequencing confirmation. The S gene was one of those three target genes. If only two genes or one gene was found, the test would declare negative. For Omicron, it is said the S gene is missing. That's what they're saying, we just read. Now, this means now when the test returns one or two of the target genes, but excludes the S gene, then instead of being declared a negative, it's declared an Omicron positive. So you're seeing some of them, but not all of them. Before, it used to be a negative, but now it's just been declared Omicron. Now, could it be? Sure. But isn't that something that needs to be fleshed out, like so many other things? Or do we just trust the very people that have continually been caught lying about everything during this narrative? This adjustment to the test sensitivity will result in many more positives or false positives. There's plenty of things you can research in here, links and images and so on. But here's another interesting part. Something similar happened last December, 2020, when there was another interesting peak when Alpha was also said to be, guess what, missing the S gene. So down here, you can see green, 3S gene positive, orange, 2, gray, 1. What once was negative became positive. Now, here's the interesting part. I think, and this is very obvious, especially for anybody who understands data and how this has gone this whole time. Look how every region in Scotland, and we'll get to Scotland in a minute and show you their data, just like we showed you from the UK in general, increased at the exact same time. How is that? Every region at the same exact time? That's not natural. As he says, that's not how viruses would spread. They all go up in sync together. There is no way that specifically the highlands, let's say, the islands, borders would experience the same growth as Central Belt at the same time during the lockdown. I mean, everything's possible, but logically, that does not make sense. These are different areas, different elevations, and we're going to pretend to just instantly spread exactly the same. Or they were testing everywhere with the same setup to give themselves negatives as Omicron, and everywhere they tested was the same thing, and it all went at the same time. Seems pretty interesting to me. Now, he admitted to the CON during their briefing on Friday that this documentation of the government transcripts that are available online, the missing S gene is indicative of Omicron, when in reality, it's just a negative rebadged as a positive. It says right here, it will include data, not conclusive evidence of the case of Omicron, but is a highly, and this is what we were reading just to make it more definitive for people right here on the WHO website. Pending sequencing. It is not for sure, but that's how they're treating it though, just like they did with Delta. I told you this would happen. Now, a couple of interesting points they made. He added on down here. A year ago, the PCR only returned a positive when three genes from the this is actually the first one. It was this one right here. And this little segment. How do we know the variants that they've got? Listen to the conversation.
How do you know what variant they've got? If they're just doing a lateral flow that comes up on there, do it on a PCR, do they tell you which variety of strain you've got? Also, I guess people will worry about or be ending up in that stage where you have to isolate, it takes you out of the workplace, it takes your kids out of school. I mean, that's your thing. So is that sensible?
It is sensible. So the PCR test, and we've got a really big PCR testing infrastructure, it can identify this the S gene of the strain.
There it is.
Which allows them to warn people to say, look, you need to isolate for 10 days. What I've done on school.
Okay, so what he just admitted right there is that they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, right? They're using that S gene dropout as confirmation. It's not confirmation. They need to genetically sequence it to make sure. It's just as likely that this is an absolute negative test, that it's not actually what they're dealing with, or possibly that they have already been sick and that they have dead virus, and that this is what many of them admitted, is that this can very clearly give a false positive. Here's what he says right here. And you know this because you've been watching this show.
Now, the test just now is a bit rubbish. It is positive if it finds live virus or remnants of dead virus. It can't tell the difference. So you could still be shedding virus 6 weeks after you've had the infection and still get a positive test, and you're not infectious. So the test we have just now is a bit rubbish. And this,
right. So this is another. This is the National Clinic Director telling you that these don't work. They are rubbish because you can get a lot. You can have, if you've been sick or you have previous immunity in many cases, that's what that original conversation was, the cold, SARS, you can have possible false positives on top of the fact that just using too high of a cycle threshold is guaranteed to get false positives. So here we are, and we're using something that can detect dead virus that can then be named. So let's say you do that and it shows a lack of the S gene and you say, well, there you go. There's Omicron. Is that happening? I guarantee it's happening. To what degree, we need to find out. But we never will, because nobody will have this conversation in places where they have access to the data. It just won't. It's just not happening. They hide this stuff. And this seems to bolster or justify or explain, rather, why we're seeing things like this. Now, that doesn't mean it proves it, but this is a correlated point. This is something we're seeing in Vermont. COVID positive, that's what we're told, people in Vermont that somehow magically have no symptoms are clogging up all the ERs. But you know what? You're not getting out of this local report. You don't hear that part of it. What you hear is our hospitals are overwhelmed. COVID cases through the roof in Vermont. Of course, because they leave out the side of it. Well, none of them have symptoms, but you don't hear that when you scream about hospitalizations and your ER and your hospitals overwhelmed. Here's what he has to say.
Some Vermonters who are able to find antigen tests and then test are clogging up emergency room.
By the way, I don't know why it cuts out right there. He said test positive for the podcast. And off the bat, think about it. He's referencing the antigen test, right? The one that, you know, is most people have access to at the store. Remember, this is going to be something they're transitioning to. It's already been discussed as of December 31st. So it's interesting that that's sort of the point here, is that the antigen test is not enough and there's false positives. And we already know that. So it's not going to change much.
Some Vermonters who are able to find antigen tests and then test positive are clogging up emergency rooms. Rutland Regional Medical Center's emergency department has been overwhelmed with asymptomatic people. The hospital's medical director says some people who test positive with a rapid test go to the ER looking for a PCR test. The Vermont Hospital Association says it's hearing similar stories from other parts of the state. RRMC says those who are asymptomatic and receive a positive antigen test should stay home and reach out to their primary care provider.
Now, does that sound like what you would be told in the middle of the biggest pandemic in a century? Oh, you caught it? Just wait. Just stay home. Let's see if it happens. Yeah, that sounds like it makes sense. Or it sounds like that's what you would say if you knew most likely you're not going to be sick. Most likely it's going to be a cold, which is what they're all telling everybody. Oh, if you have a cold, it could be COVID. You may not know. Get a test, right? Just like they keep saying, right? A virus so deadly that you have to be tested to know that you have it. Totally lines up. clearly this is ridiculous. If you're having people rushing in, you know why they're doing that? Because they're terrified, just like that lady on the plane. They believe that this is the biggest thing ever. And so, oh my God, I'm going to get sick. We're all going to die. But that's not true. If they fully understood that the vast majority of people would be completely fine if barely even get sick with the sniffles, then they wouldn't be so worried. On top of that, if this was an honest situation, they would say, oh, you did get it? Well, here, take some vitamin D, take some of this, take some of these prophylactics, or here's many things you could choose to take if, of your own volition that could clearly have an effect. Of course, none of that's happening because they don't have any discussions around these because fake news. Just like they told my father, oh, you have COVID? Well, go home and take ibuprofen and come back when you get sick. That's actually what their instructions were. So how do I fight it off? How do I do things now to stop that from happening? Not even a conversation. Unreal.
The only time you should go to the emergency department, they say, is if you have a positive test and you are very sick. The hospital says the flood of asymptomatic people prevents others in need of immediate care from getting it.
It's not so much the beds that are the precious resource, it's the staff at this time. So we have to have some of our clinical staff provide.
Oh, and why is that? Oh, that's right, because you fired a bunch of people that probably had natural immunity. So they, just like every other part of this, and whether it was intentional or not is for you to decide, their actions created the problem. Every single one of them. Remember when Trump kept screaming because he picked up on it from the independent media that the solution would not be worse than the problem? Well, welcome to the solution being worse than the problem. That's where we were in his administration as he continued into Biden's. That's what they did. They fired the people that probably had natural immunity, and whether or not they did, you fired them and now you're having them hired back. Or you have firefighters who were fired who are now acting off, they're coming and working off hours to help because they need them, because the people who have injections are getting sick. It's pathetically obvious. But he's admitting it right there. They don't have enough people. Gee, who could have seen that coming?
Providing care to those people, and they can't provide care to the folks in the ER.
The doctor says the health department's PCR testing is the best option for asymptomatic people, even though the results will take a little longer. He says by going to the emergency department, you are also potentially exposing yourself to someone with COVID
right,
who is very sick.
Exactly, because that's where most of the transmission happens. Look back to the beginning of this whole thing. The majority of transmission has happened in hospitals, because that makes sense, right? COVID positive Vermonters with no symptoms. The idea that people are screaming or, you know, that are scared, that are going in and getting tested when they don't even feel sick is the exact problem. And that's what they want. This is leading to the illusion. Now, Jack Posobiec points out that Vermont has the highest vaccination rate in the nation. The nation is one of the least densely populated states, and the ERs are clogged with people with no symptoms. That is what an illusion looks like. And the media does not package it that way. What you'll hear from them is hospitals overwhelmed. Go and get your injections. I'm not even making that up. Meanwhile, the NFL chief medical officer is warning that there's almost no indication of asymptomatic spread, right? So what are we doing here? Why are we freaking out? Everyone's being locked. There's no, and we knew this from the beginning, from a 10 million person study that found out of 10 million people that only 300 were asymptomatic. And of those 300, none of them were transmissible. Why? Because they didn't have symptoms. Historically, when we used to pretend that COVID didn't change, that we understood literally everything, that as Fauci said in the beginning, symptoms are what spread respiratory illness. But not today, I guess, because COVID, you know how that works. The idea is that there is no asymptomatic spread in a statistical sense. I mean, there's zero, statistically speaking. Is it possible there's a case? Yes. At the end of the day, it should not in any remote way influence policy decision, but it is, because it works. It's the unknown. It's the fear of the hypothetical. We don't know. Anybody could be sick. That's why we're all now sick until proven healthy. That's tyranny. We are in an authoritarian medical state. That's where we are right now. The facts don't matter. Now, Andrew Bostom, MD, points out again, as I mentioned the other day, which will lead us into the next point. Don't forget that amidst the coercive COVID-19 Omicron booster mania, the reminder that the only random controlled trial on the booster, the data around it, 10,000 people for Pfizer, actually it failed to show improvement in any of the basic outcomes, transmission, hospitalization, or death, and infection rate among previously infected. Now you can read it. Here's the link for yourself. I've already gone over it in a previous show. It's obvious. How do these things not matter? Now, here is something from the 24th. I love pointing out how ridiculous these Twitter updates are with no discernible information. It's just a statement of fact that they would want you to think is fact, which is really absolutely challenging the reality. Vaccinated people, they claim, are not more susceptible to COVID infection overall. Well, we're going to ridiculously point that how that, I mean, this is just flagrantly wrong. And I mean, they're lying to you. There's no way you can make that argument. And I think the only reason I think that they think they can get away with it is the word overall. Because they know, for as a matter of fact, that as we'll show you, as we've shown you before, you have an increased risk of infection for at the very least the first 20 days after taking the first shot. Then you have a doubling of cardiac risk. You have a 50% of people who take these injections have a suppression of their immune system for an unknown period of time. All of that leads to what? More susceptible to COVID-19 infection or any infection for that matter. But there's a new study we're going to get into today that shows you, on top of all of that, that this is ridiculous. That in fact, absolutely within 3 months increases your risk. They just don't care about it. But first, we're going to get into the general risk before we get into that right after it. Now, it says data from the Office of National Statistics in the UK claiming that the double vaccinated and triple vaccinated are more likely to test positive has been misrepresented. Did you hear that? So this is a Twitter fact check, fact checking the Office for National Statistics of the UK. They're eating themselves alive. This is ridiculous. So the Office of National Statistics for the UK put out information that shows quite clearly that's what's happening. But they don't like that it shows that. So they're, oh, it's being misrepresented. According to Reuters, new data shows breakthrough cases among vaccinated people are more likely to be Omicron than other variants. Not that vaccines don't work or that people are at greater risk of infection than the unvaccinated. Except it literally shows you that. But all they're doing is pointing to one thing. What they're fact checking is that the data that they put out specifically from this one post says that. Not that vaccinated people are more susceptible. You see what I mean? They're fact checking that they said that. That data doesn't say that. They're wrong. It misrepresented it. What about these other three studies that very clearly point to the fact that they are more susceptible? We're not talking about that. But we'll sure as hell make the title seem as if we are. Because that's how fact checkers work today. Oh, and also note, as I keep showing you, where is the source material? We said so. Fake. That's all it is. We said so, therefore it is. Pretty ridiculous. Oh, if you want to make sure to see how well these things age, here's a one from November 16th where they said, oh, a statement by Bill Gates about the vaccines and transmission has been taken out of context. Oh, great. That aged well, didn't it? You mean the vaccine that we now are openly saying doesn't stop transmission? Great job, Twitter. So was it taken out of context? Which, by the way, at the time, wasn't that it was wrong. It was a little misunderstood. This is when they were trying to soft roll that it doesn't stop transmission. But now we know it doesn't. Great job. This is the fact check world. It's ridiculous. And it doesn't even actually work with facts. But going into this actual argument of whether more susceptible, let's start with the fact that it's verifiable that the cases, at the very least, are aggressively on the side of the fully vaccinated. So if you're actually making the argument here that vaccinated people are not more susceptible to infection in general, we're not even talking hospitalization or death. How do you explain for me that in the UK, from week 47 to week 50, that the vast majority, over 80% of the cases are on the side of the fully vaccinated? The only category where it's not aggressively slanted to the fully vaccinated is under 18. Every other category is, hard, aggressively slanted to the fully vaccinated. 51,000 in the 18-29s, in the unvaccinated, 163,000 on the side of fully vaccinated. Every category is like that. How in the world can you even make the argument? I keep doing that. Let me move this one. They're not more susceptible if the vast majority of cases are on the side of the fully vaccinated, or for that matter, the vast majority of the hospitalizations and deaths. Last time I checked, I think it was 70% are on the side of the fully vaccinated. Okay. Well, since you've seen this many times, and we'll come to week 52 when it comes out in the next so many days, but let's focus in on public health of Scotland. Now, I just want to make a quick point that I saw this in there, that they're also making clear that the proportion of cases specifically with the S gene target failure. So that doesn't mean they know for sure it's Omicron. They know they've used a PCR test that doesn't find the S gene and they're calling that Omicron. So could they be false positives? Could they be not even any, could it be not there at all? Yes. This is what they're saying. Even on the Public Health of Scotland, a proxy for the Omicron variant, not that it's actually there. That's crazy. Has exponentially increased. When? Well, since they started testing for it. Weird, right? That their S gene target failure in Scotland accounts for 60% of all cases reported. Now, you could argue that means the 60% is all Omicron, or it could mean that 60% of those people don't have anything, or they have a cold, or they have any number of other things that are being called COVID-19. There has been an almost 70% increase in the number of lateral flow devices, asymptomatic tests carried out in the last week. That's the point. 70% of people are being tested when they don't have symptoms. And plenty of them are false positives. This is the illusion building back up yet again. Now, I just wanted to show you where this information was coming from. Here is the breakdown. Oh, is that the same page? Let me see. No, okay, good. I thought so. So this is the one that had the S gene discussion from Public Health Scotland. Here is the main page from December 20th, published date December 22nd, that gets into some important information around it's exactly the same data we're looking at from the UK. Same breakdown anyway, between vaccinated and unvaccinated. Now, weirdly enough, the way that they display this, I argue, is meant to be confusing. And of course, I have helped out a little bit and made it easier to digest. But what you'll notice is they break this down in a strange way. One, they don't give you the total, which you can easily find by adding up the numbers they have. And then this is the total only for certain week breakdowns. And they break it down by 6-day intervals. It's just so stupid. That doesn't make any sense. So what we're looking at in general here is number of cases first from November 20th to December 17th versus one dose, two dose, and three dose breakdowns in the same time frame. Okay. And so, but weirdly enough, they do it like this in this two the double stacker graph. So you can't line them up. That's why I did it like this. So you can see the lineup, right? Because it goes straight across. You got November 20th to 26th, and it goes unvaccinated, one dose, two dose, three dose, and shows you the number of cases, shows you the total population with it, and then it shows you the percentage, right? So there's two things to look at here. The comparison, or I guess three really, comparison of unvaccinated to people with injections, the comparison of unvaccinated to one dose, two dose, and three dose, and doing it percentages like that, and then the per 100,000, the percentage. Or not, I guess not per 100,000, but specifically the percentage of the population, which is the same concept we're talking about, so that you can compare the percentage of the population. So it's not just that there's that many more fully vaccinated and that's why it looks like this, which is what argument they make. What you'll find is the vast majority of every single category is on the side of fully vaccinated. And then the percentage of population is at the very least the same. Nothing about that adds up with their narrative. So starting with cases, I broke it down with the information. I wrote it down. It's in my hand right here. We're going to go through the information. Okay. So right now, cases from November 20th to December 17th. That's the important part. It's not all over the whole time. It's between that category. And then going back to this real quick, it's as it says up here, number of COVID positive cases of individuals by week and vaccination status. So these are people that have been given a test and have been told they're positive, which all the caveats that go along with that. Okay. So total cases in that time period, 97,772. When adding up the numbers they give. So people who are unvaccinated, the percentage is 32%. 32% of all the cases in that time frame were unvaccinated. So right there alone, that does not add up with what they're arguing. Clearly, it's more susceptible if only 32 are on the unvaccinated side. To make that more clear, vaxxed in general, so one, two, and three doses combined, is 67% of the cases. 67%. That's obvious. So are they more susceptible once they've been injected? Very clearly. Because you're supposed to pretend that people who are unvaccinated are have a higher risk of getting sick, but yet that's not how that breaks down. Of course, they're going to argue, well, cases make sense because more are vaccinated, but every other category, well, we'll get there next. But just looking at these case breakdowns here, one dose accounts for 8%, two doses accounts for 52%. 52. Three doses accounts for another 7%. So the two-dose category, which you'll find across all the discussions here, the two-dose category is where they're at the most risk. And you'll see why that is when we get to the data around it. But pulling back out, you can see the percentage breakdown. And look at how very close it is. At the very least, look at from December 4th to December 10th. Unvaccinated is 0.53, or if I'm thinking 53% of the number. Or no, excuse me, it's 0.53 based on the percentage. It's the total cases divided by the total population of unvaccinated. So it's 0.53%. Okay, so the argument should be that should be much higher than the two doses. But look, it's also 0.53%. So it's the exact same prevalence. The prevalence in that time frame is the same between people with two doses and people with none. And it's more. There's no way you misunderstand that. This is a pandemic of the injected right now. And it has been before this, but very clearly under Omicron more than anything. Okay, going to the next one. Here we are. And I can scroll down here. You can see it on here as well. Going to emergency. Age standardized rate of acute hospital admissions where an individual had a COVID positive PCR test up to 14 days prior on admission or during their stay. And that's important too, because people get tested while they're there with a broken leg and they're told it's COVID and it goes down to COVID hospitalization by week and vaccination status. So again, November 20th to December 17th, same way they weirdly cut this up in a strange way. So here it is. So going on to specifically hospitalizations. Okay. Total hospitalizations in the time frame from November 20th to December 17th, 1,394 based on the data that they have here. Unvaccinated, 27%. Hospitalizations, only 27% of hospitalizations between that time frame are in the unvaccinated. Anybody who's been injected accounts for 72% of the hospitalizations. 72%. Same was like this before Omicron. Delta was the same, in my opinion. It's become more obvious with Omicron, because the injections are the problem is the same in my mind, but Omicron seems less severe if you believe that's what's happening. So aggressively continuing and slanting harder on the side of the fully vaccinated. But if you're just talking two doses alone, 53%, including with the other 15, that's the three doses, because what, two doses is still considered fully vaccinated, right? Well, then three doses, you have to include that, have to. So that is what, 68%? 68%. Is two dose plus three dose, 68% of the hospitalizations. But then, of course, you add on the one dose too, which we should. That is 72% of all the hospitalizations between November 20th and December 17th have been in people who have injections. But 68% of them are fully vaccinated, fully vaccinated. There is no way to misunderstand how you're looking at that. There's no way that that makes sense in their argument. Finally, the deaths. This is the most important. Out of 362 total deaths they claim happened in this time frame, this one starts November 13th for some weird reason. So that's very consistent, right? Okay, so this is 362 total. Unvaccinated account for 17% of the deaths. 17. Oh, you know what I forgot to do really quickly was show you the percentage breakdown. That's one of the most important parts here. Okay, so if this is back to hospitalizations, number hospitalized. So we're being told that the percentage of these categories, as you can see, generally 38, 37, 42, 34, week by week. I should have done an average on those, actually, to give you guys an average. I mean, you could just glance at it and say maybe 40, maybe 39. Okay, so then you go over to one dose. You could see that it's higher. It's higher in the first two categories. Then you go over to two doses. Same thing, 31%, 37%, 37%. I mean, look, 37%, that's the same percentage between the week of November 27th, December 3rd. So if you have more hospitalizations on the side of the fully vaccinated and the percentage of the population is the same, they're lying to you. There's no way to explain that. That's why they will never touch on this. Not in the way that I am. So back to the deaths, 362 total deaths in this time frame. Unvaccinated accounted for only 17% of them, 63. Okay. People who have been vaxxed in one way or another account for 82% of the deaths. 82%. just the people with two doses are 69% of the death total. 69%. Add on another 9% with people with three doses. 78% of the total deaths in this time frame are people with two doses or three. And then you look at the breakdown. Okay, so we have the percentage here. 5%, 9%, 7%. Well, oh, excuse me, I take it back. This is why I mixed those up before. This one, the other two are percentage. This one is per 100,000. Again, why can't they keep it consistent? Who knows? Per 100,000. Braced by week. 5, basically 10, 8, 5. Look at the two doses. Jump right to that. 5, 6, 7, 10. They're not different. First one's 5.15. Two doses is 5.18. So if you've got 70% of the deaths and the percentage of population per 100,000 is the same, you are being lied to. Some people don't like the data part of it, the actual numbers, but guys, this is the most important. This is unequivocal. There is no misunderstanding what you're looking at. They just lie about it. Crazy. So one last point to this is they're lying. Vaccinated people are not more susceptible to infection overall. Lies. Willful deception. And here's Welcome the Eagle 88 pointing out that Veyers almost set a record on the, yeah, this was yesterday on Christmas, deleting 144 reports like this 14-year-old female that you can see right here. Product administered in an inappropriate site, which is usually how these, you know, Walgreens or Waffle House, 14-year-old, single dose. The point, though, is that you can look at the information for yourself and you can see quite clearly that this is, they are deleting quite a high amount. The links are here. You can look at the stuff for yourself. But they're deleting information. Should that be okay with something that they're pretending isn't even happening? They're not even looking at the data, but they're deleting some? Come on. There is something very obvious happening. Jean Reese points out that 27-year-old female, this is another Veyers report, nursing mom of twins, 18 days post the second dose. This is Moderna, mRNA. Quote, she is breastfeeding mother of twins and has noticed that 3 days after she developed the rash, her infant son and daughter are also beginning to develop lesions on their hands that appear similar. Well, this can be explained by making sure we understand that they still don't have information about whether it's safe. The safety profile of the vaccine is not known in pregnant or breastfeeding women due to their initial exclusion from the pivotal clinical study. All right, this is as of November. They didn't do one in a month, right? Let's not pretend like that even makes sense, like they could. They don't know. Yet they're allowing pregnant women and breastfeeding women to do it anyway. And then you see stuff like this, and then she gets dismissed and called crazy. But why is that? If we don't know if it's safe, wouldn't we go, okay, well, maybe that's true. Nope, not in COVID clown world. You say anything bad about the vaccine, you're fake news, despite the fact that we literally don't have evidence to suggest that this is safe. All that aside, we're already changing the definition of fully vaccinated, as we keep telling you. It's already happened. But now they're trying to slowly roll this out for those that don't want to see it, but need to be convinced that it makes sense. Omicron might, already has, change the definition of fully vaccinated, what you need to know. Boosters provide more protection. You see, this is my point from before. If you've got no protection and it increases, you could make that sound like the best thing since sliced bread. It's a significant increase from basically nothing. Well, yeah, but it's still not enough. Or if it's even really there to begin with, or if it fizzles out in a week or a month or 3 weeks or 3 months, boosters provide more protection against Omicron than two shots alone. Well, that doesn't mean much if it's nothing, right? Will that change what it means to be fully vaccinated against COVID? They're pretending like the only thing you can do is take a shot. So you might as well take it, even if it doesn't work because it's better than nothing. Well, no, there's a lot of other things better than nothing and better than this, including being healthy, vitamin D, exercising, or taking other prophylactics. Or getting naturally sick and having natural immunity. Now, none of these things, all of this should be your choice, including deciding if you want to just take care of yourself. And if you do get sick, then you have natural immunity. That's your choice that they're taking away from people. Nearly 205 million people in the U.S. are now fully vaccinated for COVID-19, according to the CDC, meaning they've reached the two shots of Pfizer or Moderna. However, recent evidence strongly suggests booster shots are needed to protect against the new variant. Well, no, they just did a study that showed that it had a better situation than it was a moment ago, so therefore this is better. That's all they're saying. Not that it has any effect because it doesn't stop transmission, and clearly the vast majority of people getting sick with Omicron are fully vaccinated, as even Gavin Newsom admitted to. As the Omicron variant spreads quickly through the U.S., now accounting for about 73% of new infections. Again, how in the world they possibly know that is ridiculous, or is obvious. They don't. It's a guess. Or they're using the absence of the S gene to pretend that they know and acting like that's definitive, and this person states that as fact without giving you those qualifying points. Great job, mainstream media. Health officials and other organizations are discussing what it means to be fully vaccinated. Quote, we're looking into the definition right now, says Walensky from the CDC. Briefing, it was a briefing specifically about changing how the CDC defines fully vaccinated. Like, how insulting it is to our intelligence that they're still pretending like we don't know. You know why they're dragging their feet and why she refuses to answer the question when she gets put to it by people that still, even in the mainstream media, get upset by what they're doing? Because they don't want the people who haven't gotten their second shot to get pushed away. They want to pretend like you can still meet that and still get your passport. And the moment you give in, oh, now we're moving it to third. Because it's happening already in Israel and other places where you're being told you can do get everything back to normal. And then once you take the bait, we switch it over to three. Quote, that evaluation is currently underway. To be very clear, our recommendations are to get boosted. Yeah, exactly. So as even Shepard Smith was upset about, then why don't you change it already? Well, we're evaluating that right now. No, you're not. You made your mind up. You recommended getting it, therefore you made your mind up. You guys are afraid to say it because people are upset right now. On Tuesday night, Dr. Fauci, Anthony Fauci, chief medical advisor to Joe Biden, asked on MSNBC if the definition of fully vaccinated would be updated to include booster shots. His answer, quote, you know, it very well might. Unbelievable. These are cowards that are very clearly trying to soft roll what they've already decided. Some colleges and universities aren't waiting for public health agencies to decide. Oh, because that's normal, right? Because colleges get to just decide what medical interventions you have to take, right? Only in COVID clown world, on November 23rd, Wesleyan University in Connecticut became the first college to make boosters mandatory for students starting in 2022. So they just decided for themselves. That is criminal. Other Northwestern, Northeastern colleges have followed suit in recent weeks, including Syracuse University, Smith College, and New York University. A list of colleges requiring booster shots can be found at Best Colleges. How in the world this is acceptable to anybody is beyond me. They're not even following they're not even, quote, trusting the science, even though they never were. So here are the ones screaming us down. Trust the science, you conspiracy theorists. And the moment that they go away from it, they go, well, we're going to do it anyway. So now they're the conspiracy theorists. And I'm being facetious, obviously. So only we have to, quote, trust the science. You guys can just make up your own decisions because vaccine good? Apparently so. And we're the crazy ones. Can you get COVID if you are fully vaccinated or receive a booster? While two doses of Moderna or Pfizer vaccine combined with a booster shot doesn't provide complete protection from a COVID infection, in other words, that for another way to say it more accurately is it doesn't stop transmission, and we've all seen that very clearly, and they've all admitted that, but they leave it kind of unambiguous as possible. The vaccines offer a sturdy defense against catching the virus and suffering serious illness. Okay, somebody want to define for me what the difference is between catching the virus and protection from infection? There's nothing. There's no difference. They're just using terms they're not supposed to be. There is no defense against catching the virus because it's very clear that this is not stopping transmission. But they want you to think that they want you to be confused and just trust that they're telling you to do the right thing. Walensky on Wednesday said an unvaccinated person has 10 times higher risk of testing positive for COVID and a 20 times greater risk of dying when compared to those who are fully vaccinated and boosted. That's just simply not true. Walensky's been the champion of just saying things with nothing to back them up or pulling data from places that are wildly inaccurate, like, as she got caught for, pulling data from a time when nobody was vaccinated to argue why everybody was vaccinated, saying, well, look, all the people sick are unvaccinated. Yeah, Walensky, that's because you pulled it from a time when nobody had the vaccine. You utter liar. But she got caught and they just downplayed it and went forward. Nothing backs up this 10-time argument. In fact, all the evidence we're going to show you clearly points the other direction, peer-reviewed and otherwise. According to the CDC, you're fully vaccinated 2 weeks after you receive the second dose. Exactly. Just making sure we're clear on that. So you have two doses, and then there's a 14-day period where you can die, get sick, and you'll go down as not vaccinated. We've already told, or not fully vaccinated. Same difference, the way they're framing all this. Says, or any combination of the two-dose vaccines approved by the FDA. So they're still pretending like combining these injections is okay, even though, as we keep showing you, they don't have the information for that. Oh, this might be not the right spot. Oh, it was right here. Interaction with other vaccines. COVID-19 vaccine will be used in individuals who may receive other vaccines, but it says very clearly the efficacy or safety of either vaccine have not been performed. Co-administration of these injections and their safety have not been performed. I don't know why this is so confusing for people. I don't know why we're the craziest ones. I saw somebody frame us as Looney Tunes on Twitter. Oh, the last work of Vagma, man, they're Looney Tunes. Yeah, God forbid we should point to their own documentation and make sure it's very clearly aligned with what's really crazy. Okay, their data says you cannot combine these because we don't know if it's safe. We haven't performed the studies. But here they are literally saying any combination of the two doses are okay. But also note that they say approved. Any combination of the two-dose vaccines approved. But there's only one, they say, and that's Comirnaty. There's no two. But it doesn't matter. They know the people that are towing this line are so far away from following the data that it just doesn't even matter. Either way, that's completely dangerous. That's medical misinformation. Why would the definition of fully vaccinated change from two doses of the mRNA vaccine to three? It says this month, as preliminary studies showed, Omicron's ability to infect those who are considered fully vaccinated. The definition began shifting, if not formally, then practically from two to three. As the study showed its ability to infect the fully vaccinated. But we're pretending like it's not the case. Even Twitter's fact checking. Quote, as far as I'm concerned, I make it very clear. If you want to be optimally protected, get boosted, Fauci says. So you're saying three then. And obviously, we need to see how clearly obvious that is. Why would you argue it's the best thing you can do, but you're not going to change the definition? Chair of the University of California, San Francisco's Department of Medicine says he thinks the change is coming soon because he's not an idiot. We can all see them slowly dragging their feet. It's increasingly clear that if you have three shots, you're in pretty good shape. Nope, that's not true. It's increasingly clear based on what they're telling you that's the case. But when you look at the data, you just see a minor increase that goes away really fast. And we're pretending like that makes sense. Well, it does in the world where you get an injection every 3 months. But even then, it increases your risk in multiple other ways that they're pretending isn't there. Get to that next. I think we will stop calling people with two shots fully vaccinated within a week or two. Omicron's going to make that very clear. What, the thing that's not very dangerous? Yeah, that sure makes sense. Down here it says, vaccine makers are already pushing for three doses. Right, and as always, because Pfizer's creating policy. Right? Pfizer and Moderna are influencing the direction, just like we keep showing you. They say something should happen, therefore it ends up happening. We could pretend that's because they just took their advice. Pfizer, a company that's been caught lying endlessly, is driving policy. Let's make sure we are aware of that. Now, here's just a transcript of Fauci also saying, this is Menendez saying, is the definition of fully vaccinated going to change to include boosters? Fauci says, you know, it very well might. Ridiculous. It also says down here, well, I would hope that the realization that we are dealing now with Omicron, that is a very formidable foe in the virus. How so exactly, Fauci? It's less dangerous. And you know, based on the research in the past, that this, if spread fast with less dangerous, that'll make it go away. But that's not what they want, right? They don't want that to happen. He says, if you look at the war we're having with the virus, again, as always, the war, because your body's the battlefield, that people will then realize to put aside any ideological consideration about why they may not get vaccinated. Oh, is that why? Because anybody not wanting it's only because politics, right? How about it's because independent of politics, like anybody intelligent and two brain cells to rub together are acting like today, you know, the 70% of the country that don't align left or right. They clearly see that it's dangerous. They clearly see that it's not working. But all that's ideological, right? Because that's the only way they can make this make sense to the minority that they scream are the majority. And realizing it's the best thing for you and your family, they say. Well, that doesn't even make sense based on everything they're pointing at, but just narrative, but also your societal responsibility. To not allow yourself to be a vehicle for spread to someone else who might be vulnerable. Okay, so if the vaccinated can spread it just as easily and in fact have higher viral load, as we'll show you again in a moment, want to explain that? No, he won't, because they don't want you to know that. Let's make sure we're clear on that. The vaccinated are spreading this just as much. And in fact, four of the five highest transmission states in this country are some of the highest vaccinated states. All this is backed up by the CDC data. And they have 4 to 5 times higher viral load in their nose because most natural immune people out there have mucosal immunity. Either way, how is it exactly that we are allowing ourselves to be a vehicle for spread when many of us, most of us, in fact, based on your data, have natural immunity, yet the people who are fully vaccinated are spreading this like crazy? You see, that's narrative versus fact. They don't care. That is a criminal speaking who's very aware of this information. Now, as we showed you before, Australia is telling you it's now down from 5 months to 3 months. 3 months. Boosters every 3 months. That's where this is going. Not just next 3 months, but every 3 months. And I'll show you why. Here is Germany recommending the same. Now it's down to 3 months. Weird. Isn't that funny how we saw this coming? As it says here, it had previously recommended getting a booster 6 months after completing the primary course of vaccination. The move follows other countries like Britain in shortening the gap to also account for the weakening over time of the immune protection from vaccination that has been observed. Exactly. So you realize that doesn't mean just this one. That means every time. If we're clearly seeing the weakening of immune over time from the same injection based on an earlier strain that's not affecting this, which is also another point. That's why I played that clip in the beginning, that you're hurting yourselves because we're creating antibodies for something that's not there. There's so many data points to this. It's every 3 months. Therefore, it's going to be an injection every 3 months. And here's what Javid said from the UK. We already played this for you before, but it's very obvious.
JCVI published its advice in the last hour, descending order to protect those who are most vulnerable, who are at risk. Fourth, that severely immunosuppressed people aged 16 or above who've received three primary doses should now also be offered a booster dose.
Well, and since that's playing, I might as well just show this again too. Right, the people with immunocompromised, you say, that we should get to them first, huh? Well, it says the safety profile of the vaccine is not known in immunocompromised individuals. That person should be in prison. They don't know if it's safe, and yet he's forcing it on them. Just like everywhere else in the world. Get it to those immunocompromised first. Get it to those elderly first. Oh, you mean frail people with comorbidities? Yeah, there's limited information on the safety in frail patients with comorbidities. The most at risk are being given it first, even though they don't have safety data. I'm never going to stop showing this document because it's incredible that this is still, that it's that obvious. Back to him.
Finally, that children aged between 12 and 15 should be given a second dose 12 weeks from the first dose. I have accepted this advice in full.
I think I skipped it.
With this new variant on the offensive, these measures will protect. First, it advised that the minimum dose interval for booster jabs be halved from 6 months to 3 months.
Sorry. That's weird. I didn't mean, I shouldn't have skipped that. I thought I was at the end. Okay, so you can clearly see that there's a coordination in regard to making this 3 months. Obviously. And as I'll include, I won't go into it deeply, but just the same thing. The Wayback Machine from all the way back in February 16th, where in St. Louis, they clearly let the cat out of the bag that 3 months after the last dose, you're no longer considered fully vaccinated. Multiple locations let that slip, and then they deleted them. Why did they delete them? We clearly see it happening because I think it was too early. Now, to one of the biggest parts of this conversation today, a great share by Ezra Levant from The Rebel, who's also on Super U. I believe he's the first one to break this story. I mean, at least I didn't see it anywhere else. And the articles I see covering it are pointing to his tweet. So great job on finding this. It just goes to show how obviously the media and the supposed experts are not trusting the science when they're not. Then it takes the independent media to find these things and put it out there. They're not looking at this stuff. This is from the study from December 22nd. Right, so it's been out there 4 days. He shared this 2 days ago. 3 days ago. Okay, it says, holy moly, this study shows that after 3 months, well, what do you know? The vaccine effectiveness of Pfizer and Moderna, specifically in this case against Omicron, it's actually negative. Pfizer customers are 76.5% more likely, and Moderna customers almost 40% more likely to be infected than unvaccinated people. Pretty simple. Now, this is what the data shows. People, you know, pull their hair out and say, anti-vaxxers, because pointing to data. And yes, it's on a preprint server. And he points out the last line of the study, and I'll show you that. I agree. It's we've been showing this the whole time, how these studies will show you something. The data will show you something. And yet they just find the opposite because they want their funding still. As long as they end up finding this means more injections, then it's all good. But here's the actual study. Well, first of all, what I find very interesting, posted on December 22nd, and then you see this, it says view the current version. Usually just means it's either been peer reviewed or that something's been updated or it's been posted or published a different way. But what's funny is you look to that current version, see it's the next day, they don't even give you the full information. So if you somehow only came across the new current version, I think there's a reason for that. I think that's intentional. My opinion, But you notice, same study, same basic abstract, same exact abstract, except they remove the space in between the two. It's the same exact thing, but you won't see the full text breakdown. How is that if it's the next one, right? This is supposed to be the current version, and you don't even give the full text? There's absolutely intentional actions like this being taken, guys. I just want to make sure that was clear, because this is so you get it to people won't find the full picture, because just the abstract does not get into the full picture. So here's what it says. First, the abstract. We own for the podcast, the title reads, vaccine effectiveness against SARS-CoV-2 infection with the Omicron or Delta variants following a two-dose or booster from Pfizer or Moderna, a Danish cohort study. We found a vaccine effectiveness against the Omicron variant of 55.2%. Now here, we're talking about boosters here, guys. Specifically, shots given in the context of Omicron, but people are absolutely most cases getting boosters right now. Because, right, as we've shown, it's stalled. Most people that are getting them right now are not new. They're people that are getting the next version. Most people that have not gotten it have been digging their feet in. That's why it's been stuck at 50-something percent forever. But it says 55% against Omicron and 36.7% for the biotech and Moderna vaccines. It says, series vaccines. In particular, we found a vaccine effectiveness against Omicron. So it basically is 55.2% effectiveness, which, first of all, realize that after a certain level, I believe it was below 50, they're not even supposed to be allowed to be emergency authorized anymore. And that's why when you go to 36.7%, and this is respectively, in the first month after primary vaccination, right? So we're talking about these two. So 55 and then 36 respectively for Pfizer and Moderna in the first month after the vaccination. First month. However, the vaccine effectiveness is significantly lower than that against Delta infection and declines rapidly after just a few months. Rapidly. So this idea that this means that it begins immediately. Just like we showed you before with the Jerusalem Post article, right? This is the same discussion from before, and this is about Delta. That's what we need to understand. This is not just an Omicron thing as they're trying to couch it. This is antibody levels decrease after two doses of the Pfizer vaccine, says the study. As it says here, antibody levels decrease rapidly after two doses. And the time frame is almost immediate. It ends, and the point was it basically comes down to nothing after 6 months, but it was basically 2 months on, it was dropped off a cliff. Same point. Now, what I want you to think about as we get into the next information is the interesting contrast of where there appears to be no point in time where this thing is actually helping you at all. And we'll combine this with the other parts of it, the suppression of the immune system, the doubling of cardiac risk, the increase of risk of infection in the first 20 days. That's on top of this. And this is in comparison to vax versus, this is in comparison to the effectiveness in regard to Omicron. And this is specifically vaccination series. Now, as it says, however, or the last part, the vaccine effectiveness is reestablished upon revaccination. Now, what they're saying is the continual vaccination. So yes, you can get this back up to 55, 36%, which is shouldn't be good enough for anybody anyway, if that's even actually what we're seeing, but you need to keep doing that. That's the point. If it goes away after 3 months, what they're saying is, well, every three, we've reestablished upon revaccination. There is your example of what they're talking about. They want you to get vaccinated every 3 months, seemingly forever, because you need to, apparently, and that's what they're saying. But you'll see as we get in deeper, it says by December 12, 2021, there were 5,767 identified Omicron cases in Denmark with a median age of 28, which again, this, remember, we're talking about PCR tests. So for all we know, this could be false positives. I guarantee it is to some degree. Vaccine effectiveness among those who had received a booster dose 14 to 44 days earlier was 54%. Again, this is booster dose. So we're on third shot here. So let's not pretend like that means anything. 54%, you're flipping a coin. And on top of that, the injection problems that follow are obviously more important. And then you add the idea that the data from both the UK in general and Scotland specifically show you that this is not helping in any discernible way. Vaccine effectiveness against Omicron was 55.2% initially following the primary Pfizer injection, but waned quickly thereafter. Vaccine effectiveness against Omicron after primary Moderna injection similarly indicated rapid decline in protection. Like, they're right now pretending like the third shot's going to continue forever. It's the same as the rest of them, just like anybody honest told you. It's going to wane just like the other because it's not anything different. It's a third installation of the same failing thing. By comparison, both vaccines showed higher, longer-lasting protection against Delta. So the not workable Delta, remember when Walensky said live on the air, it doesn't stop transmission against Delta. They've all admitted this. So now you're getting something that makes it even less effective than that. I don't know why that's not clear for everybody. The negative estimates in the final period, arguably, and this is what he's talking about, the negative estimates in the final period, and this is their explanation for it. I'm not sure if I agree with this. Arguably, which means they don't know for sure, suggest different behavior or exposure patterns in the vaccinated and unvaccinated cohorts causing underestimation of the vaccine efficacy. So they're saying it could be because there's different behavior patterns, but that's just a guess. At the end of the day, all we have is the data that shows the negative information. Now, it says our study contributes to emerging evidence that Pfizer and Moderna primary vaccine protection against Omicron decreases quickly over time, with booster vaccination offering a significant increase. But as we showed you up there, it's no more than the other. It just takes it back to a subpar position. But yes, that is significantly higher than basically nothing, right? In light of the exponential rise in Omicron cases, this is the crazy part. These findings highlight the need for a massive rollout of vaccinations and booster vaccinations. That's the crazy part. So it shows you that it's not effective and it's waning very rapidly, and that it actually goes negative after 90 days, which I'll show you next. And yet your plan is to roll it out as fast as possible. That's incredible. So here's what Ezra Levant was showing. This is the and I can show you right here, actually, before we go away from it, where the graph is right here. He just has it highlighted with the red boxes, makes it a little easier to see. Estimated vaccine effectiveness for Pfizer and Moderna against infection with SARS-CoV-2 Omicron and Delta variants during November 20th and December 12th. Now, make sure you see, first of all, that the Delta is the same scenario. It goes down to, at least Pfizer specifically, goes down to below to 50% after 3 months. Same thing. That's why they want the three-month interval. But look at Omicron. Look at what he's highlighting here. First, look at Pfizer. Right out of the gate, you only have 50% protection. Right? So 31 to 60 days, it goes down to 16%. Remember when we told you this from the Israeli data like 6 months ago? Not specifically in the case of Omicron, but in regard to the tapering off of the effectiveness of Delta or just whatever it was dealing with. It drops off to almost nothing after a 6 month period, or specifically 3 months is when it begins to fall off a cliff, but it tapers off to almost zero, as we showed you a long time ago. But then 60 days to 90 days, almost 10%. But then here's the point he made clear. After 90 days, it goes aggressively negative, an increased risk. Of course, what they want to say is, well, it could be this or it could be that. But the things I'm going to show you next pretty clearly show you that's what this thing does. Even Moderna goes to 39% increased risk after 90 days. Very clear. So here is Steve Kirsch pointing to the same thing. New studies show that the COVID vaccines damage your immune system likely permanently, which that's what we'll show you next. The vaccines are making it more likely you'll be infected with Omicron 90 days after you're fully vaccinated. To keep vaccine effectiveness high against Omicron, vaccination every 30 days is needed. So he's saying every 30 days. It doesn't seem too far-fetched. It's alarming, and it should be. Worried about Omicron, he says? Guess what? After 90 days, the vaccine they gave you is going to make you more likely to get infected from Omicron, not less. The longer you stay on the vaccine treadmill, the harder to get off in the future and the easier you'll make it for the virus. In short, he says, we've been lied to about the vaccine. It is protecting you less and less over time. While you may get a benefit from earlier benefits, the benefit for other variants and likely other diseases is going to be negative. In short, you're getting a short-term benefit against Delta, but at the expense of a degradation of your overall immunity to everything else. You're being deceived. And here's Ezra's tweet right there. I think that was it. I don't think I had anything else in here. A lot of good information here, by the way. Breaks down a lot of other stuff. But I just want to reiterate the point there. And then it brings us to a really important one that we'll talk about. And actually, I'm going to rattle off the other point there before we show this. But here's Dr. Malone pointing out COVID vaccination and age stratification all cause mortality risk. And this is why I believe he's starting to change his stance to say that this is not safe for anybody. The benefit-risk analysis here is aggressively slanted towards risk for every age group. And he already started to say that's going to change based on this current situation and Omicron. He shared this on December 14th. Suggest the risks of COVID vaccines and boosters outweigh the benefits in children, young adults, and older adults. And the only category they leave open is people that are extremely at risk. But I, again, argue that those are the very people that they never tested are actually safe, immunocompromised, frail. So it's almost made this way. Like, I can't stop seeing it that way lately. Now, we'll get to this in a second. Before we do that, I want to just rattle this off, and then we'll go back at it again. So here we have Steve Kirsch and everybody else pointing out that you have this 90-day period. Or at the very least, you have the study very clearly showing you that you have an increased risk after 90 days, 3 months. But what happens before that 3 months, right? So here's what happens before that 3 months. 50% of people that get the injection immediately take on a temporary or potentially temporary immune suppression, or called lymphocytopenia. They say it may last a week or possibly longer. The study, it was open. It kept going. So it could be potentially forever. And that's what the experts who regarded this were talking about. It goes on. At the very least, you have a weeks-long period of immune suppression. So you have an increased risk from that right in the beginning. On top of that, you have a doubling of cardiac event. Now, it's important to point out that this study, this is on the Wayback Machine, because as plenty of others showed, when it's too very obviously pointing to making the point, the editorial team steps in and changes this. Now, they did. They changed it, and they changed the title and acted like it was okay because they were using the data never changed. So it's insulting to your intelligence to pretend like we just can't make it as clear, because the title clearly says mRNA COVID vaccines dramatically increase your inflammatory markers. And when you read it, and plenty of other experts have framed it the same way, it doubles the risk of cardiac event. But all they did was change the title. But guess what? The data's still there. So they're just trying to cover what's going on, guys. The editorial team, not the scientists. That's politics. Now, on top of that as well, we've shown you, you have an increased risk of infection in the very beginning, 50%, in fact, in the first 7 to 9 days. This is the study we've talked about before from March 2nd, 2021, the early effectiveness, and showing you what, specifically of the Pfizer injection in this case. And it shows you, without doubt, that you have a 50% increase. One is the baseline. Up is increased, down below it is decrease. You want to see below. So what we're seeing here is 7 to 9 days, you have a 50% increase in potential. It increases your risk of catching specifically COVID-19 by 50% in the beginning. Then it tapers down to still above 1 to 20 days. So the first 20 days, you have an increased risk of infection of COVID-19. Then it goes back down, and then it goes, it stays below 1 right there. But the point is, it goes above that, 50% in 7 days. So 50% increase in 7 days of infection, doubling of cardiac event, and a general decrease of your immune system, potentially ongoing. That's incredible. Add that on top of that after 3 months, you have a dramatic increase in just general infection. So at what point does this thing actually help you? Now, on top of that, add this part. And this is the craziest thing to me, because this is so very clear. And this, again, was the one that Dr. Malone was referencing. From October 2021, COVID vaccination and age stratified all risk mortality. And I believe we even pointed to this already. It says, however, existing surveillance studies are not designed to reliably estimate life-threatening event or vaccine-induced fatality rates, or VFR. So this scientific study is pointing out that they're not set up to actually even know how risky these things are, despite them telling you that. It says here, regional variation in vaccination rates was used to predict all-cause mortality and non-COVID deaths in subsequent time periods using 2 independent, publicly available data sets from the U.S. and from Europe. Results from fitted regression slopes suggest a U.S. national average of vaccine-induced fatality rates of 0.04% and higher vaccine-induced fatality rates with age, and 146,000 to 187,000 vaccine-associated U.S. deaths between February and August 2021. That's what the scientific study is finding. Amazing they didn't talk about this, right? Notably, adult vaccination increased ulterior mortality of unvaccinated young. This I tried to suss out in the study, and this is crazy to me. I want to know why that's the case. So basically what that's saying, if I'm reading it correctly, is that adult vaccination, so adults getting injected, are increasing ulterior mortality. Like not can like just mortality around this situation of the young who are unvaccinated. So what I think that ultimately means is people who are adults who are getting injected are having problems because of it. And that is generally affecting the mortality of their young they're taking care of. That's crazy. But overall, what you're going to find is that what they're finding is this, there is, this is not safe in every category. At the very least, they say the people that are super at risk, they may find a benefit, but everybody else, it's dangerous. Comparing our estimate with the CDC reported vaccine-induced fatality rate, which they're claiming is 0.002%, suggests Vayer's deaths are underreported by a factor of 20, consistent with known Vayer's under ascertainment bias. Right, exactly what we should know if this was an honest conversation, that that's what it is, that Vayer's is a generally understated number. And it says, comparing our age-stratified vaccine-induced fatality rate with published age-stratified coronavirus infection fatality rates, suggests the risks of COVID vaccines and boosters outweigh the benefits in children, young adults, and older adults with low occupational risk or previous coronavirus exposure. That's everybody. That is the vast majority of people. The risks outweigh the benefits, according to the scientific study. Now let's read a couple of points from the study itself. Here's the first one. Then this first part just simply says, existing safety and surveillance studies are not designed to reliably estimate COVID vaccine-induced death risk. Just want to reiterate that. They're not designed to do so. So all these people acting like they have everything they need while they ignore all the data that points to it because it's unverified, they know they don't know what's there. They're choosing, they want it to be that way. That's again why we point to the study, Highwire made this clear, that Vayer's, or specifically Harvard and HHS did that study, which is what they're pointing to, that found only 1% is being discussed. Only 1% makes it on Vayer's. That's it. And what happened? The CDC just stopped the conversation. They wanted to make a better system that was directly tied in with real reporting. But no, they just stopped returning phone calls and emails. That's not even a joke. And here we are using the same broken system that they pointed out wasn't working. They want it that way. I don't know how you can see it any other way. Why? Because it's able to be dismissed. The Vayer system was what they used to stop other programs in the past. Why now it doesn't matter is beyond me. And it's just a signal. No one honest is claiming that every Vayer's data point should be taken at face value, but it is a signal. And clearly, if you've got more combined signals in 1 year than you do from the rest of the entire program, then that's a pretty big signal, but they don't want to hear it. Vaccine cost-benefit ratio. According to a recent meta-analysis of infection fatality rate studies, up to 90% of the variation in population-wide coronavirus infection fatality rate is explained by age composition and the extent to which older age groups are exposed to the virus. This is what we keep trying to tell you. This idea that we can just combine everything and give you a general risk is childish. It's so obvious, and it was right in the beginning. It's so heavily slanted towards the older, the elderly. That's why they want to do that, because you're not at risk. And here's the point. Yet again, the study reports from the huge combination of these other studies at age 10, and this is still doing the breakdown, you have a risk of 0.002%. And this is taking the data they have at face value, which I promise you is overhyped. And that's not just my opinion. That's taking all sorts of other data points we're not going to get into right now. Age 18 years is 0.005%. 25 is 0.01%. Less than the flu right there. Okay. So 20, even based on the combination and this data, taking their information at face value, it puts everybody under 25 at less risk than the flu right now. And you factor in the risks they're discussing here, you're putting people at risk by giving them the shot. Now realize that they're even arguing that 45 and above are also not worth it. That's what this is saying. It goes up to basically above 65 is where it goes to 1.4%. And by the way, at the very top, or rather 65 and below, even that is still not even close to 3.6% that they told you in the beginning to get you scared. That was Neil Ferguson and his, yet again, misrepresentations. Calculations based on 61 studies and 8 preliminary national estimates of ionitis suggest a median of 0.05%. That is including the wildly overhyped number of over 85 and over 65. Or just generally over 65. And of course, we're using the information from the nursing homes, which we already showed was to some degree intentional. But even that 0.05%, when you combine everything, is not even close to what they want you to think is happening. Now, it says, for example, a 55-year-old attending events over a given time period with a 10% infection risk, because remember, we're not talking death, we're talking infection, has a 0.1 to 0.04, or 0.04% chance of dying from COVID, which, by the way, they make the clear point, which the media doesn't want you to think about, is similar to the odds of vaccine-induced death. So even if you want to pretend that 0.04 is enough to freak out about, the risk of dying from the vaccine is about the same. That's right. But you'll never hear that from the mainstream media. Now, this is on implications for public health policy. There is little to no evidence that vaccines reduce community spread and transmission. In fact, they don't, and they've admitted that. It says and this is the important part that we continue to tell you, as so have a lot of other people, Highwire and plenty of others. These injections, or the studies around them, were not designed to estimate vaccine efficacy in reducing infection and hence transmission of the virus in pre-asymptomatic persons. They didn't even set out to find that. Talk about a planned situation. Indeed, a recent July CDC study reported a majority, 75% in fact, of COVID infections were among fully vaccinated people in an area with 69% vaccination coverage, with similar viral loads between vaccinated and unvaccinated. There you go. So point back to what we were just saying, how Fauci's pretending like you're putting people at risk by allowing you to be a vehicle for spread. Well, it's the same situation. In fact, if not the same, the study showed higher viral load, but there's no differentiation other than them placing a different lens over the unvaccinated. Given that vaccines do not appear to reduce trans community spread and that the risks outweigh the benefits for most age groups, vaccine mandates in workplaces, colleges, schools, and elsewhere are ill-advised. We do not see much benefit in vaccine mandates other than increasing serviceable, obtainable market share for vaccine companies. Wow. Conclusions. In the European and Israeli data, we find that COVID vaccination correlates positively with mortality 0 to 5 weeks from vaccination. That means they go together. So as vaccination goes up, mortality goes up. But then it says they correlate to go lower from 6 to 20. But you have to understand that we're talking about a general increase in your mortality in the first month and a half. That's simultaneously while you have a 50% of people have immune suppression. Well, everybody has a doubling increased risk of cardiac event. And for that first same time period, at least 7 days, you have a 50% increase in infection. It's almost like they're working perfectly in sync. Significant regression terms estimate 130,000 to 180,000 U.S. deaths can be attributed to vaccination between February and August 2021. It's amazing. What happened to trusting the science, right? Our findings raise important questions about mass COVID vaccination strategies that warrant further investigation and review. But you won't find that because they don't want to hear it. Anything that finds anything remotely in this category will be dismissed as fake news. For your safety, of course. Finally, Germany's parliament is to start discussing, guess what, the compulsory vaccination of general population in the first week of the new year. Now, who cares about all the data, right? Who cares? We're going to force it in you, despite the science finding that it's actually not a benefit to most people. That's where we are now. But don't worry, though, because all the bots out there are screaming that it's all okay, though, because I have my vaccine, therefore I'm safe. As Professor Norman points out, this is not normal. And sadly, I argue it is normal. He just maybe hasn't seen it till now. All of these tweets in the last few days from blue ticks with almost identical messages. Tested positive for COVID with mild symptoms. Thankful for vaccine and booster. Here we go. I mean, just take stock of some of these names, guys. These aren't just, I mean, whether these are people that are being used as bots, like people like Elizabeth Warren. These are well-known people. All parroting the same message. Just tested positive for COVID. My symptoms are mild. Thank God for the vaccine. Just tested positive for COVID. And I tested negative earlier this week. Thank God for the vaccine. It's the same message everywhere. Now, they're probably getting talking points from somebody who says this is what we're supposed to be saying. The point is, this isn't natural, but it is normal. This is what they do now. All across the board. You think that's the only one? It's not. Here's some more. All sorts of people. For the podcast, it's just... it's a grouping after grouping after grouping, all saying the same thing. tested positive for COVID this morning. Now, take note of these are all people that are fully vaccinated. This one's three times, triple vaxxed, and I tested positive for COVID. And they're saying, great news, though. It's all great because I have the vaccine. But you just tested positive for what you were told was supposed to keep you safe. It just doesn't add up. And it's unbelievable how this is continuing forward while their own information is showing that it doesn't work. Congressmen, mayors, I tested positive yesterday. Oh, they're apparently all testing positive. Well, what is the correlation here? Well, they're all fully injected. Well, that makes sense, doesn't it? Because it increases your risk of getting sick. It increases your risk of getting your immune system going down. It increases your risk of everything you're talking about today. Now, on that same note of bots, whether it's them doing it or bots being paid to do it, however you want to look at this, it's clearly a coordinated message that doesn't align with any factual, like, they never would have wanted you to think that you're going to get sick. It would just reduce the symptoms when they were first selling you this thing. They have to say that now, and they have to pretend that was always the case. Even though they yelled at you, this would keep you safe and you wouldn't die, you'd never go to the hospital. None of that's true. But here is what Twitter just came out with. Weirdly timed. Someone has to sort out the bots from the humans on October. And this is from October. It's from last month, essentially. Someone has to sort out the bots from the humans on Twitter, and we've got the team on it. Says, we've launched a label for the good ones. And while the label isn't an endorsement, which exactly that's what it is, we want you to know which bots are made by developers to help ascertain or just to harmlessly share info. Okay, great. So I said, so essentially trust us because our bots are the good bots? How about no? Not even close. The last thing we're going to do is trust what Twitter is telling us are the good bots, right? So these are all the good bots. These are all the bots trying to aggressively influence you with their opinion in a good way. Why? What makes it good? Well, because they agree with it. So what this ultimately comes down to is naming anybody bots who don't go along with the narrative or they explain, you know, just like we saw with Syria and plenty of other conversations. Remember when Syria girl got named a bot because she was towing Russian talking points? Like, it's just, it's really obvious that these people don't care about the truth. Narrative is all that matters. And here is Dr. Eli David pointing out that regardless of everything we just talked about, they're now actually going to highlight just the unvaccinated and actually now the double vaccinated who are now considered unvaccinated in Israel as the dangerous ones. And they're going to put sanctions on them if they don't do what they're told. But let's pretend like it's a choice though, right? Attorney General authorizes restrictions only on the unvaccinated and double vaccinated, even without medical justification. Israel becomes the first country to allow direct punishment of the unvaccinated and double vaccinated. So all those people that got tricked into getting two shots are now going to have to get the third if they want to keep doing what they're doing. I hope they don't. But the point is, just like I kept telling you, you're so crazy. What happens when they shift to the third one and then suddenly you're no longer fully vaccinated? I promise you that none of them ever thought that was going to happen. And all they're going to want to do now is blame you for why that's happening, even though there doesn't make any sense. Israel's attorney general gives nod to sanctions. Sanctions. That's what they use. That's their word on unvaccinated people. I thought that was far too perfect. It perfectly aligns with what we've told you was happening. Under COVID-19, we've been telling you from the beginning that you are now under U.S. sanctions, just like they've been doing in the past. They're driving you into a desperate situation, so you don't care what changes as long as it stops the desperation. That's what they do anywhere else. We even know what it's coming from, just like they do. You think that the Syrian people don't know who's causing their discomfort? You don't think the Iranian people or the Bolivian people, you don't think they know it's the U.S. government? Of course they do. But they are starving their children to death. The Yemeni people, they know what's happening. But if you're literally sitting there watching your child die in front of you, at some point you're going to go, look, I don't even care. Just stop. Sure, you could put Hadi back in power. Sure, U.S. government, run my life as long as my child doesn't die tomorrow. That's how they know sanctions work. They used to be open about that back in Kissinger times when they'd be open about how they use people like that. Now they pretend they're doing it for freedom, which is just incredibly patronizing. Now you are in the same position. You're being put in a position where you're struggling, where you're having, and whether it's just by terror, desperation, anxiety, or that you don't have a job, can't feed your kids. Go get your shot and it all goes back to normal, right? You're under sanctions. So now Israel is going to sanction its own people if they don't do what they're told. Third shot, fourth shot, fifth shot, going forward. And Israel's already been open about the fact this is going to continue to go forward. They're the one of the ones that said that. It's going to be a continual third every 3 months, new shots. That's why we keep telling you it's already been decided. You just have to pay attention. As I said, remember when I told you that you are now under U.S. sanctions and Whitney and I discussed how your body is the new battlefield? Here you are. Official sanctions authorized against the unvaccinated. But keep pretending this was ever a choice, guys. Unvaccinated D.C. firefighters, bringing this back home, are now they were working on overtime on Christmas to cover vaccinated with COVID. So this brings me back to the idea, the thought of someone like this, right? Where these people, oh, I can't wait for these terrible people to get the shot. So they, watching them deal with this, even though they think, right, but those are the people she's talking about. The people that chose to put their lives on the line in a position where they were already back, they were already, what's the word for it? Sanctioned themselves. They're fired, lose their jobs. Some of them, you know, their whole lives dedicated to this, they've been there for 20 years, and they're fired because they don't want to get forced into a medical intervention. And then when all the people who got those injections then get sick, a lot of them, the ones that didn't get the injections and yet still aren't sick are being brought back in to cover those people that got the injections. And these are people that are doing it for you, lady, as you yell that they're the bad people. It's disgusting to me. But this is what we keep seeing. We just talked about the nurses being rehired. They're rehiring the nurses to cover the nurses that are going out because they're sick with COVID, even though they've got three shots. Of course, the media is not going to tap into this because that's obvious. Now, as the UK is also pointing out, they're already jumping over to your own New Year's, no restrictions. Can't let you get together with family members. He's already considering New Year's restrictions, but he vows to keep schools open as he goes to discuss door-to-door jabs. Ministers are planning to send teams armed, they say, with COVID vaccines to the houses of unvaccinated Britons so they know you're unvaccinated, as we keep telling you. That's not a secret. That's easy to point out. But they've been keeping a list. So now they're going to go to your houses and say, well, you don't have it. So is it still a choice then? Clearly it never was. I'm going to keep making that point because there's no choice involved here if you simply can't say no, armed with COVID jabs. They're going to be sending people door to door. Now, we're going to pretend that they have all the appropriate equipment in case you have anaphylactic shock, in case you have a seizure, in case you have a stroke or a heart attack. They're supposed to have, as the documentation shows, everything they need for all the possible side effects. They don't have that at the door. Of course not. Are they going to stand there and wait for 24 hours or 15 minutes at the very least? They claim no. They already told you they're going to skip that part. So as they give you the one shot and continue down the road, and then you have a heart attack in your sleep, well, that goes down as an unvaccinated shot. Or excuse me, an unvaccinated death. This is ridiculous. And it's forceful and it's coercive and it's just dangerous. Sending COVID teams armed with COVID jabs. 5 million people. Unreal. Now, we also have reports from nurses that are willing to tell you the truth, as you've seen many of them on this show. Brooke Jackson, Melanie Kungas telling you what's going on. California nurses report, or excuse me, Brooke's not a nurse, but in the context of the same situation, California, in case you don't remember, Brooke Jackson was the regional director of Ventavia who got fired for pointing out that there were all the problems there. And we're going to be talking to her again soon, coming up next month. California nurses report overwhelming number of heart attacks, clotting in vaccinated patients. Oh, weird. I guess you didn't hear that on the mainstream news. Yeah, because they didn't tell you about it. Now, the point is just to realize this is happening, and you can read this for yourself. This is all over the place. There's all sorts of people speaking up about this, telling you that doctors, Dr. Ryan Cole speaks up about it all over the place. We have an increase of all sorts of things, including these kind of things, but cancers, all sorts of other stuff. Now, here's something I wanted you to be aware of. We've already shown you this documentation, but we wanted to make sure this is clear. We talked about this back a while ago. Fully vaccinated now defined as three shots, but in this discussion, we talk about the introduction of thromamine. I believe that's how we were pronouncing it, right? Oh, no, it's trimethamine. And of course, it's downplayed, as you all saw when we talked about this last. Oh, fact check, suggestions, they added this and so on, and we'll get to that in a second. But just realize, guys, that this is not changing. This is as of December 16th. Here's what it says right on their own documentation. What are the ingredients in these vaccines? So as they're still trying to pretend like they're the same thing, This is verbatim what it says. Pfizer BioNTech COVID-19 vaccines for individuals 12 or older, so for everybody, contain one of the following sets of additional ingredients. Ask the vaccine provider which version is being administered. Now, we're not talking about Comirnaty versus something else. That's the next one. We're talking about anything, anywhere. There's different versions of this thing floating around. Now, what they're telling you is you should ask your provider, but do you really pretend like they're going to even know what's going on? So you could either have one with potassium chloride, monobasic potassium phosphate, sodium chloride, dibasic sodium phosphate dihydrate, and sucrose, sucrose. A lot of those things seem like almost placebo type stuff, but that it says or the one with trimethamine hydrochloride, and sucrose. Oh, so the thing that's used to in help in dealing with heart attacks? Interesting. Now, of course, that's the fact check. They say that's not why they did it, even though they go on to say that can be used for that purpose. So their fact check is, we asked Pfizer, they said that's not true, so you're wrong. I'll show you in a minute. Pathetic. Great fact check. But same thing with the Comirnaty one. So the one that's supposed to be not approved and the one that they say is approved contains one of the following sets of additional ingredients. Same exact thing. So why is there two different versions for two different groupings circulating out there? And what's the difference? So if we're pretending the same thing, how can they only, I mean, if they're obviously different with different ingredients, how do you pretend that they both have one authorization or one approval? That's crazy. They didn't go through new safety testing, and I already showed you this. But nobody cares about this stuff. Now, in case you forgot what this was, suggestions online that Pfizer added trimethamine to its COVID vaccine to counter vaccine-related heart attacks in children are unfounded. So they hope you read that and think, okay, they didn't add it at all. But of course they did. But their fact check just goes over the fact that it wasn't added for that reason. Okay, so why don't we argue asking why it's okay they added anything without safety testing after the fact? Who cares? Pfizer, along with independent health experts, told Reuters the ingredient is a common buffer against agent used to extend drug shelf life, which, based on basic research, seems to be generally the case. But there's other things you could use in that case, too, and that aren't dual purpose for stopping heart attacks. It says social media users have suggested that they quickly, quietly snuck this in, which is exactly what they did. They didn't promote. The only reason this got pointed out is because people like us pointed it out. The media didn't tell you about this until after they had to fact check it. And it's used to, they claim on this, you know, post with six shares to stabilize post and heart attacks. But here's the point. While it is true, this is their fact check, to say trimethamine can be used to treat metabolic acidosis or situations in heart attacks, a condition linked in some cases to heart bypass surgery, it is also a common stabilizing ingredient known as a TRS buffer in vaccines, medications, and non-medical products. Right. Okay, so their point is, you're wrong because Pfizer said that's not why they're using it. Cool. So Pfizer, who gets caught lying about everything, you just take them at face value and you admit that it can be used for exactly what they're saying it might have been used for, but because Pfizer said no, then that's why it's fake news? Yep, partly false. What's funny is they say partly false, but they don't even get into what part is false. They just say it's a common buffer, so it's used for that. Okay, which part is false then? Yeah, we don't care. Great job, Reuters. You guys are increasingly showing how pathetic you are in this context. Well, here is the discussion of trimethamine solution for injection. And that's the point. It's about to use for injection, even though they're using it in a case that they claim goes into your muscle, even though we know that's not true, and it does go into your veins. Trimethamine makes blood and urine more alkaline or less acidic. Oh, okay. It's used to treat metabolic acidosis, a condition where the body produces too much acid or when the kidneys are not removing enough acid from the body. And it says it could be used for other purposes. Clearly, this seems to be the focal point. It says, what should I tell my healthcare provider before I take this medicine? Well, they need to know if you have any of these conditions. Well, are they asking people right now? Are they saying, well, do you have kidney problems? Do you have respiratory acidosis? Are you breastfeeding? Are you pregnant? No, they don't care about any of that. But it's in the injection. I mean, we just showed it to you. It's right there. They have trimethamine in both kinds. Okay. So shouldn't they be asking? Yes, they should. But they're not. Because who cares? It's all good. What may interact with this medicine? Okay, well, apparently amphetamines or things like people on ADHD medication, lithium. Are they asking what you're doing before you take the injection? Of course you're not. So they don't care about any of this stuff. How does that make sense? Because they quietly put it in there, just like that said. Nobody reported it until after they had to expose or fact check what we are saying, while simultaneously admitting that it is possible, but you're wrong because Pfizer said so. What should I watch out for while using this medicine? It says your condition will be monitored carefully while receiving this. Okay, well, apparently not, since you're not even doing the 15-minute watching period anymore, at least in the UK. What side effects may I notice from receiving this medication? Okay, confusion, dark urine, fast heartbeat, general ill feeling, light-colored stool, pain, swelling, sweating, usual weakness, yellow, oh, even worse, dizziness, anxious, heart, I mean, all sorts of things. Are you being told about this stuff? And could that be lead? Yes, it could. It could. I mean, look, this could generally ill feelings and flu-like symptoms, which could be called other things, and on and on and on. Keep this out of the reach of children, but let's put it in the child vaccines. Anyway, pretty clearly that this is something that matters to them. As you saw here, Pfizer's altered its formulation for kids 5 to 11. That's the first version we pointed out. Now, clearly, they've added it to all of them. Where is the mainstream media on reporting this information? That's called informed consent. If you don't know about this, then you're not being informed, so you can't give your consent. They don't care. And on that note, about why exactly they would want to put something in here to stop that problem, now I'm not saying I can prove that's the case. All I'm saying is here's why that would make sense. Last time we looked at this was 2 days ago, 379 athlete cardiac arrests, 218 dead. Let's see what it's gone up in 2 days. Let's see how much it's gone up. 83, four cardiac arrests, and what is that, three more deaths in 2 days, which is exactly why we brought this up, because we know, we've already talked about this. Disclosed TV reported yesterday on Christmas, three football players died of heart attacks in just the last 5 days. A 23-year-old, a 30-year-old, and a 29-year-old. Football players or soccer players, for those in the United States, in the prime of their life, peak physical condition. In 5 days, just three more. It pains me. Acting like this isn't happening makes you a disgusting human being. You know you see it. That's me being fed up. Now, if you would like the day, I'm going to keep going through this as the days go forward. As always, if you haven't seen it yet, this is updated just as of December 25th. Look how many he's added. And if you go down to the bottom again, you can see all the information. It starts all the way back in just 2021, by the way. I've done coverage from back in 2020 as well. There's plenty more. You have to remember, there's a reaching population of people that were going through testing, and it started before 2021. But the bulk started when they began the aggressive push to vaccinations. And I already showed you early on that there were people getting these they weren't supposed to. But from 2021 specifically, you can see that this goes up just exponentially. And it's painful to see that people are pretending this isn't happening. Now, even if you pretend that nobody honest is saying it's 100%. This is saying just simply after they got the shot, this many people have heart attacks or cardiac arrests. And the point is, we've already established beyond a shadow of a doubt that that's exponentially more than what usually happens a year to year. 1.46 per 100,000 per year. That's a 20-year NIH study. So at what point, and the guys, this isn't even the total. You add the children in that, we're way past that. But of course, that NIH study was just about athletes, specifically professional. But why does nobody care about that? Isn't that all they care about? Well, it's not more than the average population, right? When somebody gets myocarditis, well, it's not more than, yeah, well, now we found out that it really was. They've been hiding that from you. But it's funny how that's their argument. And so now we're at a point where we can clearly, by the data, see that this is more than should be happening, and they still pretend it's not there. That makes you a disgusting human being. Now, here's an article I wanted to include. Some of these aren't even remotely associated because you can go through, but you can go through, and most of them are at least potential. My point is some of these are people that just died from different situations, but a lot of these, this is just simply NFL stars who died in 2021. Because people are asking about the NFL side of this. I think what's happening is it's being much, much more aggressively controlled in this country. And a lot of the NFL stars are people that go outside the Western health situation to get their treatment and probably didn't even get involved in this, like Aaron Rodgers kind of situation. But as you go through a lot of these, you'll find out these are people that passed away. Right here. Basically, which one was it? He just basically was found dead. Three-time pole vault found dead on January 15th in his hotel room. They said it was said a study of his brain indicated the football veteran had CTE. Which, you know, now you could argue CTE in regard to the football injury, but it could be something else. Now, again, I'm not arguing that I know for sure any of these, but the idea is there's a lot of these that you can potentially argue, or at least we should ask the question, especially with everything else going on. This is some on May 10th, 2021. 2021. Found unconscious in a hotel room. Later died. Same thing here. He died the next day at the hospital. Marius Thomas, we've talked about. Anyway, he's just found dead at his home. You know, there's a lot of these. And you go through this list. There's quite a few, guys. We could look at these. The point is that there's some, just there's context around these that we don't have. And the fact is that they're refusing to even look into it. And then they frame anybody even discussing this as we're saying everyone died. No, we're not. Right? That's how they get, that's how cowardly they argue with us, because they cannot address the conversation. Because if you have a genuine conversation and you just lay out the data, it's undeniable that people should be asking questions about this. People are terrified because it challenges what they're thinking. Now, here is one of the most recent I had about this. I usually show this one just because it includes the breakdown of the NIH study and the average. But this is one of the conversations from November 11th about the ongoing cover-up of collapsing athletes. Now, finally, Michael Tracy shares this. And, you know, again, I was frustrated because I had to hunt this down because for whatever reason, he decided not to include the link, which would have been the best thing to do because it would have been more important for people to see this and share it as opposed to sharing your tweet, which doesn't back up the data. But buried in the emergency order last week, imposing vaccine passports in Philadelphia, a requirement of vaccination for gatherings in private homes. This is the restrictions aspect of this to finish it off. And as you can see, I hunted this down and I found the actual document. Emergency regulation governing the control and prevention of COVID-19, mandating vaccines for individuals working and dining in indoor locations. And you won't be surprised to find out that he was correct. He says, under private events, spaces, and homes, effective January 3rd, 2022, no individual may host or permit a gathering of 25 or more individuals at an indoor dining location in a private place, including a residence. You're not allowed to have people over to your house without proving they are vaccinated if it's over 25. Private club, church, or facility, unless all attendees have either completed a completed vaccination series or qualify for an exemption. So you have to now have a vaccine. You have to enforce vaccine passports at your home and or stand a chance of getting arrested because they decided so in Philadelphia. How crazy is that? This is what I keep telling you. This is already happening inside the United States. We have countries all over the world mandating forced injections for everybody. Australia, Austria, Germany. It's a matter of time until Biden stands up and says, well, they're doing it. We're going to do it too. And they're justifying it in every possible way when the data goes the other direction. Here's an incredible, I'm actually surprised this is even happening because it's the other side of it, but it's still an interesting point. It says, I'm on a train to Montreal and they're making you wear a yellow sticker to show you're vaccinated. Which is interesting because I think this person's frustrated because they are vaccinated and they're the ones having to wear a sticker. But either way, what is that doing? Think about it for a second. You're being forced to show anybody who comes around you that your personal medical treatment, your vaccination status, that is not okay. In Canada, in the United States, they're violating their own rules just to force in something that makes people get injected. That is a crime. You are making people divulge their personal medical information just so they can get on a train. Remember in the beginning when that was the big deal and they said, well, no, it doesn't apply because it's hospitals. Nobody cares about it now. This is just off the rails. No pun intended. Finally, Canada secretly tracked 33 million phones during COVID-19 lockdown. Oh, whoops. Remember when they promised, when Trudeau promised that they wouldn't violate your privacy and promised the information wouldn't be sold to third parties, even though France did that already, and they're probably doing it too? 33 million phones. Do you know how many people are in the UK? Or excuse me, in Canada? 38 million. 33 million phones, and there's only 38 million people in the country. They tracked everybody. If you don't see by now that this is what it's all about, that this is, or at the very least, if you don't believe that, that they're using this under a guise of you're all in danger to do what they want, to track you, to control you. then you're not paying attention. Sadly, some of them will be okay with this because they believe they're only going to track down the unvaccinated because they're still lost. They still think this is only about that. Canada's federal government admitted to secretly surveilling its population and their movements during the COVID-19 lockdown by tracking 33 million phones. Public Health Agency of Canada clandestinely tracked the devices. So they broke the law to assess the public's responsiveness to lockdown measures. How many times, and this is yet another to the pile of conspiracy theorists being proven right, the agency acknowledged last week, according to the Black Locks reporter, which first reported this disclosure, Canada's entire population is 38 million. Quote, this is important. Evidence is coming in from many sources, from countries around the world, the next part is, that what was seen as a huge surveillance surge post 9/11 is now completely upstaged. It is dwarfed by the pandemic surveillance. You know why? As even Jimmy Dore picked up on now, probably watching our work, because this was part two of the 9/11 first step. This is the biosecurity state. This is from the author of Pandemic Surveillance. Public Health Organization plans to continue tracking population movements for at least the next five years to control, quote, other infectious diseases, chronic disease prevention, and mental health. So guess what? Yeah, you caught us, but who cares? We don't care what you think. We're going to track you anyway, even though we just got caught, for the next 5 years. Does it sound like a plan? Obviously. To track, well, of course, the virus, but, you know, mental health, whatever else we want to track too. How do you not see where this is going? It's obvious that this is unaccountable power that they're never giving back, that people are letting happen. We need to see this for what it truly is. The next part of this vaccine passport leading into the control infrastructure of the great reset of everything else that's happening around the technocratic shift that they're telling you they're building. The fourth industrial revolution, guys, they're absolutely telling you what comes next.
What the fourth industrial revolution will lead to is a fusion of our physical, our digital, and our biological identities.
The difference of this fourth industrial revolution is it doesn't change what you are doing. It changes you. If you take a genetic editing, just as an example, it's you who are changed. Yeah. And of course, this has a big impact on your identity.
Yeah. It is important to use the COVID-19 crisis as a timely opportunity. So people assume we are just going back to the good old world, which we had, and everything will be normal again in how we are used to normal, in the old fashion. This is, let's say, fiction. It will not happen. The cut which we have now is much too strong in order not to leave traces.
Exactly. Couldn't be more clear, right, from the horse's mouth, right? That's Klaus Schwab, the leader of the World Economic Forum, if you haven't seen him before. Derek Rose and Whitney Webb have done great work on The Last American Vagabond about who he is and what he's doing. It couldn't be more clear. They are openly telling you what they're going to do. They're building it in front of you right this moment. The fourth industrial revolution, he's telling you, is happening right now. And he's explaining to you before that happened what that meant, the combining of your biological, your digital identities, the implantables. That's what he openly discusses, genetic therapies and the changing of your body. That's supposed to be happening now. How do you rationalize that? If he says that is the fourth industrial revolution and he's telling you the fourth industrial revolution is happening right now, you need to hear what he's saying. So when we talk about the idea of the genetic therapy, of the implantables, and, you know, not these comically sized RFID chips that people are now beginning to be allowed to talk about on mainstream talking points, the real stuff, which we'll get into in a short time coming soon. Not the sweetest discussion, which we briefly showed you a moment ago. It's a joke. These RFID rice sized chips are from like 25 years ago. I showed you the research from 7 to 10 years ago of the Mu chip, which is the eighth the size of a grain of salt that runs on your body's own energy and movement. That's what's happening right now. That is a sidestep to get you to think other things are happening so people can point at people that are talking about it and say, fake news. Look at those conspiracy theorists talking about microchips because they're being allowed to talk about microchips now. Remember when we talked about it before, we were censored for it because it was too early. We're way past that point. Way past that point. The reality is this is going to continue. The tracking, the information, the technocratic future is going to build out in front of you, and you just need to hear what they're telling you. All of that, like Klaus Schwab described, it begins, like with 9/11, to the biosecurity state, right? The security state to the biosecurity state. It begins with the scare tactics. It begins with the threats, and it transitions into the growth of what they're trying to accomplish. 9/11 was very clear in that regard. It built what we're standing on. Now they're pushing into the converging technologies discussion, altering human evolution with nanotechnology, which they told you they were going to do in 20 years. And what did that begin with? Well, the threat of the virus, the threat of everything else that built to this point. It's very clear. It's just time to acknowledge that we can see that they're not really doing what they said they were going to do. And they're using something that's not really doing what they said it was going to do. In fact, it's hurting people. Maybe that was always the point. All we're trying to do here is give you the information to come to your own conclusions. So let's end today with something I felt like playing again. And this goes back to the swine flu. I played the clip in the entry before, but let's play out the full clip. It's about a couple minutes at the end about what I call the swine flu deception. In fact, what the WHO and the HHS and the British Medical Journal before all this started also called a pandemic of fear, H1N1. I think it was whichever one was before that, 73 and the one after it. Both of them were shown to be absolute fake news because they lied to you. And this was even covered in the mainstream media. And just see how this led to where we are today and recognize how easy it is to lie with information and authority. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
The swine flu scare of 1976. That was the year the U.S. government told us all that swine flu could turn out to be a killer that could spread across the nation. And Washington decided that every man, woman, and child in the nation should get a shot to prevent a nationwide outbreak, a pandemic. Well, 46 million of us obediently took the shot. And now 4,000 Americans are claiming damages from Uncle Sam amounting to $3.5 billion because of what happened when they took that shot. By far the greatest number of the claims, two-thirds of them, are for neurological damage or even death, allegedly triggered by the flu shot. We pick up the story back in 1976 when the threat posed by the swine flu virus seemed very real indeed.
Where did this so-called deadly variety of flu, where did it first hit back in 1976? It began right here at Fort Dix in New Jersey in January of that year when a number of recruits began to complain of respiratory ailments, something like the common cold.
Dr. David Sensor, then head of the CDC, the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, is now in private industry. He devised the swine flu program and he pushed it.
You began to give flu shots to the American people in October of 76.
October 1st.
By that time, how many cases of swine flu around the world had been reported?
There had been several reported, but none confirmed. There had been cases in Australia that were reported by the press, by the news media. There were cases in...
None confirmed. Did you ever uncover any other outbreaks of swine flu anywhere in the world?
No.
Now, nearly everyone was to receive the shot in a public health facility where a doctor might not be present. Therefore, it was up to the CDC to come up with some kind of official consent form, giving the public all the information it needed about the swine flu shot. This form stated that the swine flu vaccine had been tested. What it didn't say was that after those tests were completed, the scientists developed another vaccine, and that was the one given to most of the 46 million who took the shot. That vaccine was called X-53A.
Was X-53A ever field tested?
I can't say. I would have to...
It wasn't.
I don't know.
Well, I would think that you're in charge of the program.
I would have to check the records. I haven't looked at this in some time.
Did anyone ever come to you and say, you know something, fellas? There's the possibility of neurological damage if you get into a mass immunization program.
No.
No one ever did?
No.
Do you know Michael Hapwick?
Yes, mm-hmm.
Dr. Michael Hapwick directed the surveillance team for the swine flu program at the CDC. His job was to find out what possible complications could arise from taking the shot and to report his findings to those in charge.
Did you know ahead of time, Dr. Hapwick, that there had been case reports of neurological disorders, neurological illness, apparently associated with the injection of influenza vaccine.
Absolutely.
You did?
Yes.
How'd you know that?
By review of the literature.
So you told your superiors, the men in charge of the swine flu immunization program, about the possibility of neurological disorders?
Absolutely.
What would you say if I told you that your superiors say that you never told them about the possibility of neurological complications?
That's nonsense. I can't believe that they would say that they did not know that there were neurological illnesses associated with influenza vaccination. That simply is not true. We did know that.
I've said that Dr. Hatwick had never told me of his feelings on this subject.
And he's lying.
I guess you would have to make that assumption.
Then why does this report from your own agency, dated July 1976, list neurological complications as a possibility?
I think the consensus of the scientific community was that the evidence relating neurologic disorders to influenza immunization was such that they did not feel that this association was a real one.
You didn't feel it was necessary to tell the American people that information?
I think that over the years, we have tried to inform the American people as fully as possible.